retirement, we'll all be working.
Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now. Now.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. We're going to talk with Corey Wright, policy counsel and attorney, who advises the Free Press folks. They are a nonpartisan national media reform group that is really, honestly and truthfully, doing the good work of fighting back against net neutrality and fighting back against this Comcast NBC Universal merger, which I think, honestly and truthfully, could be the one of the single worst things that could happen in the new year. But the stomach, I just don't think that we're going to be able to hold this back. I think it's already too late. I think the pro-business people who have taken over will just ram this through. And to me, it's more consolidation. It's more putting the messages into the hands of the very few. And look, for the corporatists, that's a great thing. You know, for the Limbaughs and the Hannitys and the people out there spewing the corporate message, that's a great thing for them. For the rest of us, not so good. So it'll be interesting talking with Corey here in the first hour. Later on in the program, we'll talk with John Smith, a spokesperson for USW 7-668, U.S. Steelworkers. They represent the Honeywell workers who have been locked out. And we've talked about this for some time. They were locked out because how dare they want health care, and how dare they want security in old age, and how dare they not want to have to pay more for their health care. How dare they? And how dare they want to make a family-sustaining wage? And look, this is one of these things, and not to get too far off topic here, but, you know, look, this is a company that's demanding that their workers take their best, last, and final offer. This is it. Take it or we're going to put you out on the street, which they did. They want to eliminate all retiree health care. Goodbye. They want to do away with pension plans for new hires. And they want the current workers to pay like $8,500 out of their pocket for health care, basically paying for the whole freight. And for me, I mean, what's amazing in all of this is that this seems to be okay across this country. And it's rare that we hear people standing up and fighting back and saying, no, enough already. You're making profits. You're making huge profits. We'd like some of that, which I think we're going to have to... Eventually, I think we have to take to the streets, and eventually we have to start doing the hard work of organizing and fighting back against this. But, you know, when you see stories like this, it's important. And what really drives me nuts, according to Mark Elk in his article over at Huffington Post, union officials told him that Honeywell right now, they've already either spent or lost almost $50 million locking these people out. So basically telling them, you know, we're in charge here. We're going to kick you to the curb, and we're going to bring in scab replacements who are going to do a really crummy job from what I've been told. But we're going to spend $50 million because we don't want to pay you the 20 that it would have cost for the entire contract. I mean, think about this for a second. They are willing to spend $50 million to deny their people health care, to deny their retirees health care, to deny future workers retirement benefits. They're going to spend $50 million on that, but they're not going to spend the $20 million to provide those things over the next 3 years. Stop and think about that for a second. And look, these folks, these people are high-skilled, well-trained workers. If you work in a uranium enrichment plant, you better be. And the thing is their cancer rates are like 10 times higher than the general public. And you go, why is that? Well, they work around radioactive material. And as cautious as you want to be, as cautious as you can be, as safety conscious as you can be, there's still going to be exposures. And they want to take that away from them. And I was looking at the U.S. Chamber Watch. According to them, the CEO of Honeywell, the people who have basically kicked these folks to the curb, a guy named David Cody, he stands to make $1.2 million from the Bush tax handouts that all of our Republican friends are pushing so hard for. You know, the same people who denied the unemployed just a meager extension. You know, that $1.2 million in handouts that the Republicans want to hand Mr. Cody, that's 5,000 weeks of unemployment. 5,000 weeks. That's 100 workers for the next year. 100 people. And that's just one guy. That's one handout going to that one guy who I guarantee you doesn't need it. And I'm not going to say he doesn't deserve it, but I'm saying he doesn't need it. There are other people in our community who do need it. And he is not going to take that money. It's obvious. He is not going to take that $1.2 million and put it back into productive use into our economy. Look, he's trying to screw his workers out of $20 million now. So we'll be talking with John Smith about that. Also in the program, we're going to talk to a couple unemployed workers. Really, the folks who are going to feel the wrath of the Republican greed and obstructionism. Also, we'll be talking about the Express Script situation, which I think is another one of these absolute travesties. Another one of these companies making wild profits. Almost $1 billion so far this year in pure in-your-pocket profit off of state and government, state and local and federal contracts. And yet they're closing a plant here in the Philadelphia area. Why? Because they don't want to pay their people a decent living wage. They want big givebacks. They want massive concessions when they're wildly profitable. And I asked my friends who are the big pro business folks, is this the kind of economy we want to have? Is this the kind of stuff that we want to be doing for the next several years? Because once it starts, and it has started, it only gets worse until we fight back. And I keep hearing this frame, well, you know, at least I've got a job. Well, I can solve our unemployment problems. You can create jobs at a buck an hour. Everybody will have a job. They won't be able to eat, and they won't be able to support their family, and the economy will get worse and worse because nobody's got money in their pockets. But I can put people back to work. You know, this idea that corporations are going to save us out of the goodness of their heart is ridiculous. Look, they are the most profitable they have ever been. Ever. Almost $1.7 trillion in pure in-their-pocket profit in the third quarter of this year. The largest amount in the history of the country. Are they hiring people? Are we seeing the unemployment rate going down? No. And I look at the CEO of Honeywell. He's one of the guys who's sitting on the cat food commission. And in fact, recently the locked out workers went to Washington and got thrown out. You know, because well, we can't have those kind of people in the cat food commission. You know, those working people don't want them. Don't want to hear what they've got to say. Just like we couldn't have the single payer advocates at the table talking about the health care bill. threw them out too. And this is where, you know, for me, this is where I start bashing government too. When you've got these people who think they're kings and they're emperors, and they're the aristocracy, and they know what's best. And I look at this austerity plan that the kings on the debt commission, the cat food commission, are proposing. And in today's Patriot, what's interesting is they went through a couple of the highlights, which I found hysterical. One of them is to collapse the five income brackets into three. So they're going to go to an 8% bracket, a 14% bracket, and a 23% bracket. A cut for the very top, a meager cut for the middle, and a small increase in the bottom. They're going to lower the corporate tax rates to 26% from 35%. Now, we both know, we all know, that corporations aren't paying that top rate, and they're not going to pay the 26% rate. You could drop it down to 10%. They wouldn't pay that either. They're going to avoid it every opportunity. What I found interesting, though, because if you're talking about cutting the top rates for everybody, the top tax rates for the wealthy, the top tax rates for the corporations, and a meager cut for the middle class, very meager, where's this money going to come from? This is the debt commission. This was going to help us get out of debt, right? This is going to help us cut the deficits, right? Well, how are they going to do that? Well, we know how they're going to do it. They're going to do it on our backs. They're going to do it on the backs of the people who actually work for a living. One of their proposals is to end the $1.1 trillion in popular tax breaks to permit these low rates, ranging from deducting mortgage interest to receiving health insurance from employers on a pre-tax basis. Basically, all that health care that you've been getting, their idea is to flip that over and make you pay an income tax on it. So that 14% for the middle class, someone like me who they suggest would pay 14%. Let's say I make $50,000 a year. I pay 14% on that $50,000. Now you heap in the $1,100 a month that my employer pays for health care, and now you've jacked me up into almost the next rate, because of course you're going to make another $13,000. So that puts you up into $63,000. You're paying tax on all that. So did you get a tax cut? No. What you saw was a massive tax increase. And that's the sleight of hand here. That really is the sleight of hand. You and I will then pay more than we're paying now so that the wealthy can enjoy a really massive tax break. And that's how they pay for this. And you go through the whole proposal. I mean, their whole proposal is shifting cost responsibilities onto you and me, shifting the burden onto those least able to defend themselves, raising the Social Security age. They're talking about cuts in Medicare. They're talking about cuts in freezing Social Security. Some of the other things, freezing federal workers' pay, which Huckleberry, you know, Hound said yesterday. All it is symbolism. It's just showing people that, oh, well, you know, we feel your pain, folks. We feel your pain. And we're going to make this symbolic gesture to make you think we're doing something when it will do nothing. In fact, what a wage freeze will do at the federal government is it will make qualified people, the folks who do these tough jobs, you know, like the nuclear regulatory people, like the mine safety people, like all the regulatory folks who have to have really strong educational backgrounds and be experts in what they do to catch the criminals who are breaking the laws. Those are the folks who are going to leave. And you're seeing that mass exodus from the Republican National Committee right now. All those folks are leaving the RNC. Why? Because there are lobbyist jobs to be had out there. There are corporate jobs that pay hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, for their expertise on how to get around the regulations and how to skirt the law and how to increase their profits. So, you know, part of this whole freeze the government and drown it in the bathtub thing is making government ineffective and allowing and really promoting this brain drain to where the folks who were going to catch anything that goes wrong, like this financial crisis that should have been caught, they're not there anymore. They're the ones who are now on the other side figuring out how to get around the regulations. Why? Because we're not paying them. You know, they're not going to use their expertise and their knowledge if they can't make a living. And again, they want to increase the federal gas tax to 15 cents a gallon so they can pay for transportation. And as I've been saying all along, what they're doing is they're balancing the budget on your back while saying, and look, I'm not against balancing the budget when there's true shared sacrifice. But this is not shared sacrifice. This is you folks in the middle and you folks on the bottom. You're going to have to expect less. You're going to get less government services and you're going to pay a lot more for it. This plan right here is a Republican right-wing lunatic's wet dream. That's what this is. This is make the middle class angrier at government. Make the middle class look to government as completely ineffective. And then what you end up with is you end up with a situation where they go, you know what, we don't need it anymore. That's what this is about. And to me, the fact that we don't see people screaming and carrying on in the streets is amazing because they are balancing their books on your back. They're going to drop the top marginal tax rate down to 23%. 23%. I mean, stop and think about it. I mean, during the Reagan years, Reagan only had the audacity to take it down to 50%. What do you think is going to happen to our deficits over the coming years? Because we're not going to stop having wars. We're not going to stop getting ourselves in the middle of this stuff. We're not going to let people starve in the street. We're not going to let people go to emergency rooms and be turned away. What happens? What happens is we have a collapse. We have a true problem. And that's what the right wants. They want this chaos, and they want a small and effective government so corporations can take over. That's the dream. And this isn't conspiracy. That's the dream. All the free market think tanks are promoting this right now. The idea that, you know, corporations can run things much better. They're much more effective. And you look at the healthcare debate. You know, people looked at that and say, well, you know, government's slow and inefficient. And, you know, look, they couldn't even get that passed. You know, it took all that time. You know, for those who love the founders and love, you know, love to say, oh, I love the Constitution. That's how they set this system up. They set it up so change wasn't easy. They set it up so there would be debate and there would be a struggle to get things through. Because they knew back then that radical swings are not good for this country. Radical swings are not good for any country. And as I've said before, you know, the guy I met not too long ago from Latin America, he said, you know, back home where he was from, his family and his friends were worried about this country, that they would end up in the ping pong politic that has dominated Latin America all these years. These wild swings from one extreme to the next, looking, searching, hoping that something is going to make their lives better. So that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. Let's take a quick break. We're right back after this.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Prosperity, not austerity. That's the federal budget alternative for working people advanced by progressive economists and organizations. It's a budget blueprint for delivering fiscal responsibility without carving up our social safety net. And it's remarkably different from the deficit commission plan that does slash Social Security and Medicare and ignores the need for job creation while not touching Wall Street. Tamara Draught is Vice President of Policy and Programs at Demos, a nonpartisan public policy research and advocacy organization based in New York City. She says without jobs, there's no hope of erasing the deficit in federal debt, and she says a financially responsible federal budget can be created without hurting working people, the elderly, and the poor.
Our answer is, in the short term, we have to focus on economic recovery. So our blueprint makes a major down payment on job creation and public investment to get the economy going again. What is hurting working people the most is we aren't creating jobs, and two, that the basic essentials from the need to pay for childcare to health care have gone through the roof while earnings have been stuck in place. So unless we solve some of those fundamental imbalances, working people are going to continue to get a raw deal. We set out to figure out how can we do right by the American people and get on a sustainable fiscal path. And I think our blueprint shows you can do it, and you don't have to slash social insurance, and you don't have to cut important programs that help seniors and low-income people.
Members of the Deficit Commission, meanwhile, will vote on whether to approve the co-chairman's proposal on Friday. Are employers finally starting to add jobs? Jesse Russell takes a look.
It's still too early to say if corporations are finally ready to start sharing some of their record profits with the jobless. But numbers released on Wednesday by payroll company ADP paints a rosier-than-expected picture. In November, private sector payroll saw their largest increase in 3 years, clocking 93,000 jobs, up by 11,000 over October. The U.S. government will release November's official job numbers on Friday, and economists are projecting as many as 153,000 jobs will be added. Payrolls need to be adding 150,000 jobs per month to simply keep up with new workers entering the job market. Meanwhile, the big three U.S. automakers all saw a profitable month in November. GM was up 11%, Ford was up 20%, and Chrysler was up 17%. And it isn't simply the U.S. automakers that made gains last month. Hyundai, Honda, and Nissan were all able to claim an upward tick in U.S. auto sales. Toyota, on the other hand, was left out of the good news with a 3.3% decline in U.S. auto sales. Still, auto industry analysts are hesitant to say the industry is on a rebound, but signs are definitely pointing in the right direction.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters? Rick Smith.
Pay too much taxes, the poor get way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. We won't believe those lies again, because God is a Republican.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickssmithshow.com if you missed any part of the program. You can find it right there at the show, at the website. If you want to watch it live here in the studio, also there at the RickSmithShow.com, our Ustream is up and running. So good stuff there. Also, our Hungry and Homeless for the Holidays event is coming up December 18th through the 24th. We will be living in the giant parking lot, 255 South Spring Garden Street there in Carlisle. Raising food for Project Share, some money to help Project Share and Carlisle Cares. If you want to donate online, you can do that at hungryandhomeless.org. We have an opportunity for folks to use a PayPal account and send a couple of bucks. Everything is tax deductible. And as you know, the best way to do it would be to go to hungryandhomeless.org and throw a couple of bucks their way, 10, 15, whatever you've got, to help the food bank and Carlisle Cares. All of that is, of course, tax deductible. Your tax man will be very happy about that. So good stuff there. We're looking forward to meeting you guys, having you come out and interact. I think it's going to be a great time. We're also going to stream the entire event on the internet, so you can watch it from the comfort of your home. So that'll be a good thing. You remember the other night we talked about the Senate approving the biggest overhaul in food safety in this country's history. In fact, it was a 73-25 vote. Massive bipartisanship. And what it's to do is it's going to give some new authorities to the Food and Drug Administration. It'll place some responsibilities on farmers and food companies to do what they should be doing anyway, which is preventing contamination. And it also sets up safety standards for the first time for imported food. I mean, stop and think about it for a minute. Up until this moment, and really it's not law yet, so anything that comes into the country, we really, really don't have the ability to inspect. I mean, it's amazing to me. The Washington Post said the legislation follows a spate of national food outbreaks of food poisoning involving various products such as eggs, peanuts, and spinach.
in which thousands of people were sickened and more have died. Food illnesses, according to the Post, affect one in four Americans and kill 5,000 people a year, according to government statistics. And tainted food has cost the industry billions of dollars in recalls, lost sales, and legal expenses. And you go to yourself, well, if it's cost them all this money, if it's cost them billions of dollars, why don't they stop it? Why don't they fix the problems? Well, the reason is because it's cheaper just to let it go on because they're making billions more. I mean, it's like any risk-cost analysis. You know, like when with the tires a couple of years ago, if you remember that story, with Bridgestone. Yeah, it was cheaper just to keep pushing them out and not recall them because the lawsuits you'd have paid out would have cost less than actually doing the work and recalling it. So a couple people died. Yeah, so what? Saves us a couple of bucks. So it passed the Senate, overwhelmingly passed the Senate, 73-25. And what it did is it gave the Food and Drug Administration the authority to mandate recalls, something they hadn't been able to do in the past. Which, again, kind of makes me go, really? They couldn't do that in the past? What they had to do is they had to go to the big companies and go, oh, please, would you please recall that? Please? There's contaminated food killing people. Please recall it. And if the company said no, there was really nothing they could do. Now this law, this bipartisan effort, would give the FDA the authority to do that. It will also make it easier to find the source of food contamination. So if, let's say, you've got lettuce or spinach that's contaminated, and it's because you got workers in the field who aren't getting breaks, and, you know, hey, sometimes you got to go to the bathroom, man. And if you're not getting a break to do it, you know, we all know what happens. You do what you got to do. When nature calls, you got to go. That's what they were doing. And that's what the spinach outbreak, I think it was. That's what it was. It also requires food producers to have a written plan of action for food safety that can be accessed in times of emergency. So basically what's going on here is instead of the assumption that corporations are going to be good and pure and they're going to do what's in the best interest of society, you know, and that everything that they produce is just grand, it's just fine and dandy and it's perfect, and instead of assuming that, this bill is going to give the FDA authority to prevent foodborne illnesses and not simply react to them. And I think it's a good thing. But here, and this is where my problem with the law was. There were no teeth. No teeth whatsoever. You couldn't, there's no criminal penalties here. That's it. And I got to be honest with you. You know, you want to be a person? If the corporations want to be people, they should have to be able to go to jail like us. And as we've seen in the past, what some of these companies have done is they've knowingly pushed this stuff out. They've knowingly pushed contaminants out because they know they're not going to be held liable. Maybe a little fine down the road. Anyway, so the Senate passes the bill. It goes over to the House, and the Republicans lose their mind. First, there was some procedural thing that the Senate did that got people all up in arms. But more importantly, it was Michelle Obama's $4.5 billion school lunch program that had the Republicans just insane. You know, how dare they want to feed children? You know, taking us back to the Reagan years when Reagan destroyed the school lunch programs. And, you know, I got to be honest, I remember those. You know, I remember the Johnson Great Society programs where they had school lunch year round. You could go to the local elementary school, the local middle school, local high school, and you could get a meal. And for a lot of the kids that I knew, that was it. That's what they got for the day. And they took that away. Why? Because we needed bigger bombs, I guess. But in the Patriot today, the stumbling blocks that they said, quote, the $4.5 billion bill would give more needy children the opportunity to eat free lunches at school and make those lunches healthier. But Republicans say the bill is too costly and an example of government overreach. These are the kind of things I think government should be doing. But this sends a message to me. It really does. It sends that message that the Republicans over the next 2 years are going to be the tough luck party. They're going to be the, you know, sorry things are tough for you, drop dead party. Because all we hear out of them now is, well, we need to extend the Bush tax handouts. And you saw it the other night. Here we are, almost 2 days out. Still no talk from the Republicans on extending unemployment benefits for those who need it. And like I said earlier, you know, you got the CEO of this one company. The handout that he's going to get, $1.2 million, could be 5,000 weeks of unemployment for workers here in the state of Pennsylvania. Yeah, we've been throwing this number around at $310 a week. Sandy Vito, the labor secretary here in Pennsylvania, said yesterday the average check now in the state of Pennsylvania is $240. $240. I got to be honest, I don't know how you make it on $240. But somehow folks are doing it. Somehow folks are keeping things together on that meager sum. It's mind-blowing. But I'm telling you right now what I think is going to happen. I think people are going to revolt. I think people are not going to respond well to this you're on your own and good luck, you know, it was nice knowing you mentality. This tough love, I don't think it's going to work. And it's going to take people. It's going to take us organizing. Anyway, going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
Here's a crime drama, tragedy, and farce all in one play. First comes the perpetrator, Martin Erzinger. A well-heeled wealth manager in Morgan Stanley Smith Barney's Denver office, Erzinger handles more than $1 billion in private assets and describes himself as, quote, dedicated to ultra-high net worth individuals. Now, Dr. Stephen Milo comes on stage, and the drama quickly turns to tragedy. Milo, a surgeon and father of two, was bicycling in Colorado last July when, wham, he was struck from behind by Erzinger. Instead of stopping to render aid, the money man sped away in his Mercedes-Benz. But his car was damaged by the crash, so he finally had to pull over and call the Mercedes Service Center to have it towed. But he didn't ask for an ambulance to check on the poor guy he had just run over. As Dr. Milo later noted, Erzinger struck me, fled, and left me for dead. The doctor did survive, but he suffered spinal cord injuries, bleeding from his brain, knee damage, and disabling spinal headaches. He faces multiple surgeries, plastic surgery, and lifetime pain. Next, District Attorney Mark Hurlburt enters from stage right, and high tragedy devolves into low farce. The DA announced that he was dropping felony charges against Erzinger, instead only citing him for two misdemeanor traffic violations. Why? Because Erzinger is rich. Noting that this money handler could lose his prestigious Morgan Stanley position, the compassionate DA said, "Felony convictions have some pretty serious job implications for someone in Mr. Erzinger's profession, and that entered into my decision." This is Jim Hightower saying, "Wow, what a humanitarian!" I'm guessing that a felony conviction also would have some pretty serious job implications for any low-wage working stiff who nearly killed someone, though I doubt the DA would give a damn in that case.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
You know, we've been hearing bits and pieces about the consolidation of NBC, Universal, and Comcast. And, you know, here with Governor Rendell being a Comcast guy, I think it's a done deal. But last week, you may remember, Senator Al Franken called on Assistant Attorney General for antitrust Christine Varney to investigate Comcast because evidently they announced a new management team for NBC Universal, kind of a strange thing to happen when you don't even own them yet. Franken believed the act was illegal, a violation of the Hart-Scott-Rodino Antitrust Improvement Act, claiming that they were trying to exert control over a company before they owned it. So interesting there. Personally, I'm dead set against any more media consolidation. Our press, our media structure has been so badly co-opted over the years that fewer and fewer multinationals are controlling it. I think it's bad for competition. I think it's really bad for democracy. I've got Corey Wright on the phone. She's an attorney and policy counsel. She advises the nonpartisan media reform group Free Press on their legal matters related to policy research and campaign work. Corey, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
You know, I'm looking at this. So they're calling it a merger. I'm saying it's consolidation. It's making one out of these two. I think it's bad.
I completely agree. And what makes the Comcast NBCU merger, I think, different and worse than all other mergers is that it really gives one company control over a ton of content, as well as most of the ways that people use to access that content. I think to put the size and scope of this merger in perspective, you look at the properties that the two companies already own and think about what happens when you combine them. Comcast is already the nation's largest cable and broadband internet provider. It already owns a slew of cable channels and internet properties. And in taking over NBC, it'll also make a grab for movie studios, the NBC network, local broadcast television stations, and even more cable channels. So putting all of those under one corporate roof, I think, should give people a lot of pause, and they should be really deeply troubled by the prospect of so much media power being housed under one corporate roof.
Yeah, and here's the thing, I do this program, and we're trying to lash out and get to different media into different markets, but the reality is what we find, and I think what most programs like ours find is that the outlets are controlled by fewer and fewer folks, and they're generally very large corporations, multinational, not just American corporations, but multinationals.
I agree. And it's a real problem, especially when you consider the impact on a democracy, because access to information from a variety of independent sources is key to an informed citizenry in a functioning democracy. And by controlling content, whether it's transported over the airwaves, over the internet, or over cable, companies like Comcast and NBC can control the information that people receive and how they receive it.
You know, I've been talking about this for a while because I'm against it on a visceral level. But just being dead set against it for most people just isn't enough. So what other reasons besides what we've talked about do you see as a way, A, to stop it and a reason not to let it go forward?
Well, I think like so many of the critical issues that we're facing today, the Comcast-NBC merger is about consumer cost and choice, competition, and jobs. And I think that there's a substantial amount of evidence this merger will have a negative impact on all of them. So, for example, higher prices for consumers. Comcast already raises its cable rates every year for its cable subscribers, and we expect that the prices are only going to rise further after the merger. In particular, cable rates for cable customers nationwide could actually skyrocket because Comcast has the opportunity and the incentive to charge other cable companies that need to buy NBC content even higher rates for it. And those cable companies or satellite television providers will just pass those costs on to their cable companies, and you'll see gradual setting of higher prices for cable content, which will make prices rise generally.
So at the end of it, what you're talking about is less people working and me paying higher rates for less people working.
There is that danger. In addition, Comcast has a really, really bad reputation as an anti-union company.
Mm-hmm.
The Communications Workers of America, which is a union that represents individuals who work in the media and telecommunications industry, are dead set against this merger because they think it's going to have a terrible impact on jobs and the quality of jobs in that industry.
And I think the track record that they've built for themselves at Comcast will bear that out.
Agreed. By all accounts, Comcast has been a very aggressively anti-union company and has worked very hard to purge itself of existing unions and companies when it's taken over those companies. NBC, by contrast, has been better, and I think people are concerned that once Comcast takes over NBC, that you'll see similar practices in that company once they become a subsidiary of Comcast.
You know, what worries me is, and you look at a company, this massive company, and they're going to become even bigger. Because I got to tell you, I think this is going to go through. I don't see them stopping this. Do you?
It's very frustrating that the common wisdom around the merger is that it is going to go through. That being said, we've had several vociferous opponents. You mentioned Senator Al Franken. There are commissioners at the Federal Communications Commission, which is ultimately going to have the final say in whether this goes through, that have concerns. Whether ultimately it will be blocked or not is an open question, but there are at least people raising enough of a ruckus over concerns that I'm hopeful that they will at least try to stem some of the harms that could come from it if it does go through.
Well, let me ask you this, Corey, because as an attorney, there are antitrust laws on the books. Can you make an antitrust case out of this to say that they're just too big?
I think that there is an antitrust case to be made against it. In particular, what we're looking at in the Comcast merger is an issue of both horizontal and vertical integration. Horizontal means they're getting bigger and they're eating up their own competitors.
Right.
The vertical integration is that they're basically acquiring both content and the means of distributing it, and they can use the leverage from owning all those properties to damage their other competitors. So, yeah, I think that there are substantial issues in terms of potential antitrust problems going forward, and I'm hoping that the regulators that are looking at this will be cognizant of those problems.
Because I got to tell you, I'm hoping, I'm praying, I'm waiting, whatever word you want to use. I'm looking for that Teddy Roosevelt character to resurrect and be the trust buster of this generation. Because I'm looking at these massive corporations, and they're not just American corporations; they're multinationals who are controlling. I read a statistic the other day, 80% of everything we see, hear, and read are owned by six corporations around the globe.
That's true. And after the merger goes through, independent analysts have estimated that the takeover of NBC will give Comcast control of one in every five television viewing hours. So people have a right to be concerned about that and to worry about what happens when the news and entertainment they see is controlled by only a handful of companies.
I don't know how that can be good for our democratic process at all.
I completely agree.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Corey Wright. She's an attorney and policy counsel for the folks over at Free Press. They're a nonpartisan media reform group. Their website, freepress.net. We'll put a link up on our site at thericksmithshow.com. For me, Corey, this then comes to the Internet. Because one of the things that we're seeing, and we just saw this week, Comcast told Netflix, we're going to charge you a whole bunch more money because you're using more bandwidth to get your videos out. And they're kind of breaking their agreement, I guess, a little bit there. But the larger question then becomes, who then controls the Internet? Will we have this two-tiered Internet that the big companies seem to be proposing, or will we move more towards net neutrality? I'm curious. Your thought.
I think you're very right to be worried about an Internet where we have large corporate gatekeepers who can use their control over the broadband pipe to limit what consumers want and need to see. As you're probably familiar, the chairman of the FCC announced yesterday that he is considering moving forward with network neutrality rules. We at Free Press have always supported the concept of an open Internet where consumers have final say over what content they want to see and how they see it. And we continue to be hopeful in the process, although we realize that the devil's in the details of these types of orders.
Yeah.
And, we're obviously concerned about what will ultimately emerge.
I look at a program like we do here, and we have an Internet presence as well. We use a considerable amount of bandwidth. To be honest with you, the reality is if we had to pay huge amounts of money, we couldn't offer that to folks. And we would be alternative messages, ours or anyone else's, would be shut out of the debate.
Well, I think you're exactly right. I mean, the promise of the Internet has always been that regardless of your size or your capabilities, unlike, for example, in traditional media where it is prohibitively expensive for most of the time to actually get your message out, the Internet has always been a level playing field. Historically, that's been the benefit and the value of it. And I think it's absolutely crucial that we keep the Internet a level playing field so that entrepreneurs, independent voices, and creative thinking and innovation can actually get out there and get a foothold in the market.
Yeah, I mean, after all, wasn't it our tax dollars that started the whole thing? I mean, isn't this our investment?
You're correct. It was originally begun as a government project. They made strategic decisions to develop the Internet in a way that would allow a flow of information, and I think it's important that we preserve that.
You know, I was reading the headlines today that the FCC is in favor of something called throttling, and I'm curious, what is throttling?
I'm not familiar with that quota that they're in favor of it, but throttling would in effect be delaying or squelching internet traffic so that it does not arrive as quickly as the consumer may want to access it.
Yeah, basically they're holding back the bandwidth and slowing things down for folks who can't afford it.
I mean, that's certainly a concern, that to the extent that the internet remains a level playing field, it also has to be a level playing field in terms of people who can access it. And if you can't afford to be able to pay for priority service, I think that that will have an unfortunate impact on the marketplace of ideas and innovation.
You know, and going back and looking at the Comcast merger, I found it interesting. One of the articles I was reading said that dispute resolution would be hampered by this merger. And I found it funny that Wealth TV was having a hard time resolving its dispute with Comcast.
Yeah, it's. I think it is a commentary on how difficult it is if you are a small program or a small company to muscle up against a company like Comcast, who already has such tremendous market power. Wealth TV has had complaints at the FCC, which have been pending for some time, and they're having difficulty getting those resolved. It is a process which I think is no doubt very frustrating to independent content producers. And even though technically there are remedies on the books for them to try to invoke it, it ultimately becomes a right without a remedy because it takes so long to resolve these types of complaints.
Let me ask you a last question, I guess. It's not really a question. What have I missed? I mean, this really isn't my issue. On a visceral level, I'm against the merger. On a visceral level, I'm in favor of net neutrality. What other things should we know?
Well, I think you hit most of them because, I mean, really, as I said before, the merger is about consumer cost, their choice to access the content that they want to see. It's about making sure that there's competition both in the content that you want to see and how you get to access that content, and ultimately jobs and innovation. And I think that you're very right to be worried about what this merger will do to all of those.
Yeah, for me, it comes down to, you know, if you're one of those free market types, and this is something I think the Republicans should be just screaming about, because this is the free market. This is true free market.
It's true. I mean, the point is to promote policies that promote free market, not ones that promote corporations.
Absolutely. Corey Wright, attorney, policy counsel for the Media Reform Group, Free Press. Again, freepress.net is their website. I appreciate your time, Corey. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this.
Hey, hey, the working man like me. I ain't never been on welfare, and that's one place I won't be. I'll be working as long as my two hands are fit to use. I'll drink my beer in a tavern, sing a little bit of these working men.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made, and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Officially in love with Michelle Bachman, even if she's batshit crazy. Rick Smith.
Mercedes-Benz, yes. Thanks to us, thanks to we the people, the top 2%, they're going to be able, like Alan Grayson said, they're going to be able to buy a brand new $83,000 brand new Mercedes-Benz every year for the next 10 years, thanks to you and me, the taxpayers, because we're going to be borrowing money from China to make sure that they have the ability to drive in the lap of luxury. They're going to be able to, as he pointed out, to, you know, hey, have a cigar every 800 cigars and light those 800 cigars with a $100 bill each. That's what we're talking about. Frame this however you want. We're talking about handing the super wealthy more than they could ever imagine. And I look at this report by The Hill today. They write this afternoon, 33 House Democrats broke with the party on a key vote on a bill that would have extended some of the expiring Bush tax cuts. Only some of them. You know, the sum for the middle class, not those top 2%. The House narrowly passed the debate rules on the proposal, 213 to 203. The vote allows the House to move the debate and then vote on a final passage to extend only the Bush tax cuts, only for the middle class, letting those cuts for high income takers expire. House Republicans who want all of the tax cuts made permanent, they want it permanent, they've framed the handouts in a much better way, I think. They've done a much better job at sloganeering because that's what they do. They're great at sloganeering. To them, this is a vote on small businesses. Somehow they've extrapolated huge, massive handouts to like David Cote, CEO of Honeywell, with small businesses. And you figure that out because I can't. But, you know, that's the frame. The vast majority of Democrats who voted with the GOP were of the centrist type, the Blue Dogs, who most of them were defeated on Election Day, so we're not going to have to worry about them as the time goes by. But, you know, the Republican representative from Texas, Kevin Brady, is right when he told Fox Business News that the plan is basically dead on arrival in the Senate, because the Republicans, unless they get what they want in the Senate, nothing moves forward. And here's where I believe that Jeff Merkley is right. We should actually make them filibuster. They should tell us why, the entire time, why they stand so opposed to allowing those top rates to expire. Because look, at the end of all of this, you know, this whole argument that it's about small businesses is really BS, and we know that. You know, you look at someone like David Cote, the CEO of Honeywell, $1.2 million he's going to get from the Bush tax handouts. Now, that's not including what he would have gotten, what he gets from the middle class tax handouts. That's just the very top rate. And I say we should allow those to expire because that $1.2 million is 5,000 weeks of unemployment. That's 100 people for the year here in the state of Pennsylvania. And I think at some point we've got to look at how the national pie is divided, because we are allowing too much of it to flow upward. You know, it's not trickling down. It never has, and it never will. I mean, it's the nature of individuals. It's the nature of greed. The more you get, the more you want. The more you're gonna hoard. Do you ever see that TV show with the people with the hoarders? Well, that's the EO class. Only they're hoarding money. They're not hoarding newspapers from 1929. And what's frustrating about this is you've got the whole messaging machine of the corporate-controlled media. And this goes back to what we were just talking about net neutrality and about this merger with Comcast and NBC Universal. The smaller number of voices out there, when you have only a handful of big multinational corporations who are going to benefit from this, do you really think they're going to put any opposing view on? Do you think there's going to be any opposition by the CEO class who control the media to say, oh, you know what, for the betterment of society, you should raise our taxes? Do you really think they're going to ever say that? Of course they're not. Do you ever think they're going to say, you know what, five multinational corporations controlling 80% of everything we see, hear, and read after the Comcast-NBC Universal merger, of course, will then be five companies? That's bad for democracy. Do you think they're ever going to air that? Of course not. And what you're going to then start to see, and I've already predicted this, and this is where the Rush Limbaughs and the Hannitys and all them, they should be getting on board with us on this. Because eventually they're no longer needed. Because then the corporations take over, and then you don't want people upset. What will then happen, you'll no longer hear the outraged outragers. No more. You'll hear people saying everything's fine, everything's wonderful. And that's coming if we don't do something. Look, I'm in favor of having loud arguments. I'm in favor of having debates. I'm in favor of ripping apart issues and doing that stuff in an open forum. But it's got to be open. And the internet, to me, is that the last place that can happen. And what's happening is the corporations are going, you know what, there's a lot of money to be made here. And we're going to do it. Everything. I'm telling you, at some point, if we don't get ahead of this, at some point, everything you click on is going to cost you something. It's either going to cost you your time to watch advertisement, or it's going to cost you a subscription rate. You know, the newspapers are already saying, you know, we're going to try and rein back in this free content stuff. And then you're going to start to see multi-tiers. How much can you afford? Can you afford high-speed broadband? I mean, it's almost like that now to a degree. How much can you afford? Can you only afford AOL dial-up? Remember that? Remember how slow it was to get online and how many times you get bumped off? That's what we're heading towards. But instead of this it being poor service, it's going to be for profit. Instead of us saying it's our infrastructure, we created it. It was government investment. And say what you want about Al Gore inventing the internet. He was one of the people who said, yes, this is a great idea. Let's throw some resources behind it. And they did that, and they created it. And now the globe, not just the U.S., the entire globe benefits from that investment. That's the country we used to be. I fear we're heading. And this merger with Comcast and NBC Universal is another one of those moments where you have this consolidation of media that can only be bad. It can only be bad. And by not having net neutrality, now you give Comcast even more power. The statistic the woman said, if this goes through, one out of every 5 hours of television will be held by Comcast, 20%. And going back to what I said, five multinational corporations, 80% of everything you see, hear, and read. That should scare you. And that should scare you into action. Again, freepress.net, it was their website, if you want to check out their information and see how you can help. We're going to take a quick break right here. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Money in
Smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Prosperity, not austerity. That's the federal budget alternative for working people advanced by progressive economists and organizations. It's a budget blueprint for delivering fiscal responsibility without carving up our social safety net. And it's remarkably different from the deficit commission plan that does slash Social Security and Medicare and ignores the need for job creation while not touching Wall Street. Tamara Draught is Vice President of Policy and Programs at Demos, a nonpartisan public policy research and advocacy organization based in New York City. She says without jobs, there's no hope of erasing the deficit and federal debt, and she says a financially responsible federal budget can be created without hurting working people, the elderly, and the poor.
Our answer is, in the short term, we have to focus on economic recovery. So our blueprint makes a major down payment on job creation and public investment to get the economy going again. What is hurting working people the most is we aren't creating jobs, and two, that the basic essentials from the need to pay for childcare to health care have gone through the roof while earnings have been stuck in place. So unless we solve some of those fundamental imbalances, working people are going to continue to get a raw deal. We set out to figure out how can we do right by the American people and get on a sustainable fiscal path. And I think our blueprint shows you can do it, and you don't have to slash social insurance, and you don't have to cut important programs that help seniors and low-income people.
Members of the Deficit Commission, meanwhile, will vote on whether to approve the co-chairman's proposal on Friday. Are employers finally starting to add jobs? Jesse Russell takes a look.
It's still too early to say if corporations are finally ready to start sharing some of their record profits with the jobless. But numbers released on Wednesday by payroll company ADP paints a rosier-than-expected picture. In November, private sector payroll saw their largest increase in 3 years, clocking 93,000 jobs, up by 11,000 over October. The U.S. government will release November's official job numbers on Friday, and economists are projecting as many as 153,000 jobs will be added. Payrolls need to be adding 150,000 jobs per month to simply keep up with new workers entering the job market. Meanwhile, the big three U.S. automakers all saw a profitable month in November. GM was up 11%, Ford was up 20%, and Chrysler was up 17%. And it isn't simply the U.S. automakers that made gains last month. Hyundai, Honda, and Nissan were all able to claim an upward tick in U.S. auto sales. Toyota, on the other hand, was left out of the good news with a 3.3% decline in U.S. auto sales. Still, auto industry analysts are hesitant to say the industry is on a rebound, but signs are definitely pointing in the right direction.
The newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Also, remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. According to the Wall Street Journal, Farmer Benefits Manager Express Scripts Incorporated claims it notified its workers on Wednesday that it will be closing the second Bensalem, Pennsylvania facility after the workers recently rejected their the company's final, what they're calling the final offer. Look, you know, the final offer, in my opinion, was one that they knew nobody would take, so it would give them the cover so they could leave. That's what this is about. It's union busting at its highest form. It is what it is. I've got Ray Tichy on the phone. He's a worker at Express Scripts there in Bensalem. Ray, thanks for taking time for me.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me on.
You know, I'm looking at this story, and I'm looking at the history of this entire conflict, and I don't think they ever had any intention of dealing with you guys fairly.
I have to agree there. They don't seem to have to come to the table with all the cards being shown. They're not as transparent with us. We go through a lot of, you know, sitting around and waiting for them and them giving us excuses when it's time to come back.
So for the folks
ready to bargain.
So for the folks who haven't gotten up at the speed on this, give us a little background on what's going on with Express Script. These people are the second largest benefit managing company in the country. They get a lot of government accounts, a lot of state accounts. Can you fill us in a little bit on what's gone on over the past several months?
Well, what's been going on is we have been in bargaining and we've been making concessions in order to keep our jobs here in Pennsylvania, and also, you know, to help the company, you know, as they say, get us in line with the others, which personally I believe that's what it is. They're trying to bust our union up. But we've been battling with them. We made concessions. They wanted our retirement. We gave that up. We made concessions, and every time we turn around, the target keeps changing what they want, and they tell us that it's not good enough. And we've been on the road, you know, we went out to St. Louis and did a rally out there, you know, to make other coworkers aware, you know, from St. Louis and other sites of what's going on here in Bensalem. We've been a marquee site for years. We've helped them develop into the company they are, and now they're in a highly profitable situation, and we're in a recession, and they're threatening to shut us down when we're the top producing site, and we don't understand why.
Well, because they think they can make more money somewhere else, squeezing someone else during this time of crisis, and who knows what kind of deals they've gotten from other states to move those facilities around. We have no idea, do we?
We somewhat have somewhat of not an idea of exact specifics. Just have to look in the St. Louis Journal, Business Journal. But as for it, I mean, Mayor DiGiorgio of Bensalem has been willing to work with them. Former Congressman Senator Murphy, he's been trying to work with them. He was willing to find them. They said that Marshall Lane was old and antiquated when Marshall Lane put out 90,000 scripts in one day, and that was the highest ever done in Express Scripts history. And they said they're old and antiquated, and Senator Patrick Murphy said, look, what do you need? Tell me what you need, and I will find what you need. We also had gubernatorial Dan Honorado. He was willing to work with us and work with Express to keep them here. And it just seemed like they didn't want to be here. We don't understand why. How can you get rid of your top producing site?
Yeah, that makes almost no sense from a business standpoint. But when it comes down to an ideological point of view, the other plants in their system, let me ask you, do you know if the other plants are unionized?
I think Albuquerque and Harrisburg are. I'm not 100% sure on that. I believe them two sites are. I'm not sure. I don't think there is any other ones. I'm not totally sure on their front.
Right. So the logical conclusion would be this is just union busting.
Yeah.
And, they want to get you in line with the rest of their industry, probably, of working for minimum wage and no benefits and no health care and no pension and no job protection. Yeah, that's in line probably with the rest of their corporate image.
It is. It just seems like we have made many concessions. We have tried our best, you know, to do what the company is asking of us. And this company is highly profitable during this recession. And once the health care reform comes through, they'll be even more profitable. And they're making $3 million a day, okay, profit. And they're trying to take away from us the ones that helped build this company. I remember when I first started 7 years ago, we were 137 on the Fortune 500, and now we're down in the 90s, 91 or 90 or 89, and it's the fastest growing company in this country.
Well, again, you know, as you've said, you know, they're a profitable company. As I was doing a little bit of research there, they've made almost $1 billion profit this year, pure profit in their pocket.
Yes.
They want you to come up with $8.8 million in pay cuts and concessions.
Yes. And we have gotten to where they want us to be, but sometimes when we're sitting in the negotiations, it doesn't seem like they're being as transparent with their information, and they're not really ready to give us the the proper information. You know, we ask for the correct information and how they got it. Explain it to us. And it just seems like when we go as far as doing that, it gets blown off and we go on to a different direction. And all we're looking for is a true number so that we can see exactly, you know, where we're at with them. We believe, honestly, we are right where they want us at with these contestants. And it just seems like that's not good enough for them.
But here's the
thing. The market keeps moving.
Now, here's the thing, Ray, and this is one of the things that I've been screaming about for the longest time. This is a profitable company. They're doing just fine, thank you very much, yet they still feel the need to squeeze you and continue to squeeze the people who have made them profitable.
Yes, they are. They're squeezing us, and we don't understand it because I'll tell you like this. I've talked with many of my coworkers, and if this company was in a position where they were hurting, and the things, you know, they said, okay, we want this, we need this back because we're not doing as well, they would have gladly given it up and said, look, we want this company to stay here. We want this company to thrive. We will sacrifice if you are in dire need.
And I think that's across the country. I think that's universal. People are willing to pitch in times of need, but I'm not seeing the need here. This company is extraordinarily profitable, already $1 billion in profit.
Exactly. They're profiting, and it's just amazing. I don't know how much money you can sit on top of. That's what I don't understand. It's like we're not asking to be rich. We know when we walked in that door and we started working for ExpressFit, we knew we weren't going to walk in there and become millionaires. We just want a fair, decent wage and affordable health care. And that's all we're asking for. We want to be able to go home at night and say, you know something, son, daughter, don't worry about it. You know, the lights are going to stay on. Okay, we can afford it. Work hard enough. We've helped this company become profitable. All we're looking for is to take care of our families in a proper manner.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, the thing that gets me is, you know, loyalty in this country anymore seems to be a thing of the past.
It does. It seems like I know of one person at my job has been 39 years, okay? And this is a big blow to them because they spent so much of their life at working for this company, okay? And now they're going to take it away because they want to make a few extra pennies for their shareholders when it's affecting 1,000 lives. It's not even just affecting 1,000 lives. This is what people are not getting, that it's affecting the community. Because when we work there, we also contribute to the fact that we buy from the local store. We get food from there. Okay, we some of us live right there in the Bentown community. A lot of us live in the Bucks County community. And this is a contributing factor to keeping those businesses running too. The local vendors that come in. It's not just going to affect us.
Right.
Because there's the little businesses that right now in this recession are holding on by the skin of their teeth. And what we bring to the table, as well as the other surrounding businesses, is keeping them alive, too, keeping it so the economy is still flowing. It's a community thing. This isn't just about 1,000 workers. This is about all the residents in the community of Bucks County and Bensalem and the state of Pennsylvania.
Now, I was going to ask you about how many people work in the two facilities, because now, as I understand it, both facilities, they're going to close. And I have to be honest, as I said at the very beginning of this, when I first heard this, I honestly believe that their game plan all along was to close, but it was to blame you guys, to blame the working people for them closing. But you guys did. You came to the table, as you've pointed out so eloquently, and you said, look, we'll help out. We're willing to take concessions. And as you've hit the targets that they've asked for, they keep moving the targets.
They do. They keep moving the target, and it's impossible to keep. It's like asteroids. Okay, you're playing the game of asteroids and you're moving along and here comes that obstacle. And you have to deal with that obstacle as it comes, but when it keeps coming down so many different obstacles, you can't keep up with that. You can't keep up with that constant barrage of, oh, well, that's not good enough, but that's what you asked for. We're giving that to you.
Well, let me ask you this, Raymond. What are you guys doing to put the pressure on to maybe, I don't know if they're going to change their mind at this point, but what are you guys doing to put the pressure on them?
Okay, well, right now we got the bad news Wednesday, and we turned around and we have our union filed an injunction, okay, 10-J, in order to stop this process because they're not bargaining in good faith. they announce the closure while I'm bargaining, and that's illegal. You're not allowed to do that. That's not bargaining in good faith. That's saying we already made up our mind, but we're going through the motion.
Right.
And what happened was a piece of good news came through today. The 10J for Marshall is proceeding onward, and they found that the company is not bargaining anything, which is a good thing for us also on street because we're going to be we filed a 10J on them too for trying to close us improperly. Our union is the best union I've ever seen. They have such tenacity to stand up for us and sit there and say, you know, and show us, you know, look, we're going to fight for you. We know what you're standing for is right. We know that this company is highly profitable. Okay, we're willing to make the concessions, but we're not going to, we got to make it affordable also for the worker too. You know, we bust our butts there. I've been there 7 years and I've worked 7 days a week, literally, to make sure this company could keep going and thriving as well as my other coworkers and running side by side, running in the building to make sure we're on time and getting there to make sure we can get those scripts out and making sure that our patients are taken care of the best. And the best site has been Salem. It's been proven. We are the ones that they marquee to every other site.
Amazing stuff. Let me ask you, if you don't mind me asking, what do you make a year working for Express Script, if you don't mind me asking?
Me personally, I make 33. I'm top rate.
So $33,000 is the top rate there. Yet you've got a CEO who makes $10 million per year just for himself. The company's worth almost $27 billion. And their top producing workers make a mere $33,000, and that to them evidently is too much.
Yeah, it is to them. That's too much, and I don't know how they can figure that. When you look at the economy, you look at the gas going up, you look at the cost of homes going up. I mean, even to rent a home is costly. It's just as much as to get a mortgage for a home, and in this society, we don't determine how, you know, the economical prices around us are set. And we just want a fair wage that we can live in the community in which we work. And you can go out west and probably pay $10 an hour, which will be equivalent to what I'm making out there because the cost of living is different.
Right. And not to mention they're going to give up a whole bunch of tax incentives, a whole bunch of handouts to get those people out there.
Exactly. And it's not fair. And the one thing is like we have three brothers and sisters out there right now that they have suspended for trying to put the word out there, trying to get the word out there and let people know, talking to our clients that, you know, saying, look, this is what's going on. They're trying to close us, and this might affect, you know, the way that your prescriptions come out, okay? And just putting the word out there, and they suspended them for that. You know, we're trying to do is let people know that this will affect them because we have people that actually drive in and walk in and pick up prescriptions there. So it's not just a mail order pharmacy that is just mail out. We have those local customers here that come up and pick up their prescriptions. And it's just doesn't make any sense to me to suspend these three people for getting other people to help us with our fight.
Well,
you know, saying, look, this is affecting you.
You know the reason they're doing it. It's to scare everybody else. That's the end of it. They want to scare people to make them sit down. And I give you guys all the credit in the world for standing up and fighting back. Last question I've got for you, though. What can I do to help? What can our listeners do to help? Or is it too late?
It's not too late. It's never too late. They can put any date down that they want to. It's not over until the fat lady sings. What you can do is you contact George Pence and explain to him, you know, tell him how you feel about it and how, you know, if you're a client, that it doesn't affect your delivery and that he should keep these jobs here. And you should make sure that Ken Smith, Debbie Johnsville, and Jackie Dixon are reinstated and that we sit down and bargain in good faith. And we sit here, either we come to a decision where we can we can keep these plants open. That's the major thing, is to keep these plants open and keep us working and keep this community thriving. And just let him know that you are standing behind Ben Salem. Let him know you are standing behind your fellow co-workers, your fellow community people, your neighbor, because some of these people are your neighbors. That's what you and everybody else can do. That's Mike George Pat. Let's let him know that we're not going to allow this to happen, not without a fight, because enough is enough, and I will fight for my job.
All right. Do you guys have a website that you're pushing people towards to where there can be an action from there?
I believe it's Express Scripts Workers. We have something on Facebook for Express Scripts Workers, and if you can go on there and look up Express Scripts Workers, and it should be under the SEIU. And what happens there, you can click on and make us your friend. And we've been getting a lot of support through there too. I mean, we're currently, like, at our plant, we're trying to, you know, get contributions to help support those three suspended workers. You know what I mean? It's Christmas time. And we want to, you know, drum up some support for them. And, you know, we also want, you know, continue our fight, and we want to get the word out. So check out our website. You can always click on, you know, Google and Express Scripts Workers, Reject Last Order, and that can lead you to different sites. We have a bunch of different sites. We have information lines and things like that.
All right, Ray. We'll make sure we look that stuff up, and we'll get it on our website at thericksmithshow.com for our listeners to take an action with. Ray, I appreciate your time, and keep up the fight, and best of luck, brother.
All right, thank you. Thanks. You have a good night.
You too. Thanks so much. We're going to take a quick break right here. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Stick around.
We are now in the midst of a brand new world economy. I don't believe them. I won't despair. They are the truth and they're coming back to stay. 2% can't climb back from the 50%. Once again.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Here's a crime drama, tragedy, and farce, all in one play. First comes the perpetrator, Martin Erzinger. A well-heeled wealth manager in Morgan Stanley Smith Barney's Denver office, Erzinger handles more than $1 billion in private assets and describes himself as, quote, dedicated to ultra-high net worth individuals. Now, Dr. Stephen Milo comes on stage, and the drama quickly turns to tragedy. Milo, a surgeon and father of two, was bicycling in Colorado last July when, wham, he was struck from behind by Erzinger. Instead of stopping to render aid, the money man sped away in his Mercedes-Benz. But his car was damaged by the crash, so he finally had to pull over and call the Mercedes Service Center to have it towed. But he didn't ask for an ambulance to check on the poor guy he had just run over. As Dr. Milo later noted, Erzinger struck me, fled, and left me for dead. The doctor did survive, but he suffered spinal cord injuries, bleeding from his brain, knee damage, and disabling spinal headaches. He faces multiple surgeries, plastic surgery, and lifetime pain. Next, District Attorney Mark Hurlburt enters from stage right, and high tragedy devolves into low farce. The DA announced that he was dropping felony charges against Erzinger, instead only citing him for two misdemeanor traffic violations. Why? Because Erzinger is rich. Noting that this money handler could lose his prestigious Morgan Stanley position, the compassionate DA said, "Felony convictions have some pretty serious job implications for someone in Mr. Erzinger's profession, and that entered into my decision." This is Jim Hightower saying, "Wow, what a humanitarian!" I'm guessing that a felony conviction also would have some pretty serious job implications for any low-wage working stiff who nearly killed someone, though I thought the DA would give a damn in that case.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book title, Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books
Making
are
the
sold.
Blue Blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. You know, I look at this Express Scripts situation. They are the second largest benefits managing company in the country. They're now have announced they're going to close the second facility. That means 1,000 people out of work at a time when the economy can't afford another 1,000 people to be out of work. This is a company that last year took in $1.7 billion in pure profit. They're close to $1 billion already in profit this year. And the thing that bothers me is this place has got a lot of state contracts, a lot of federal government projects, a lot of Department of Defense contracts, and there seems to be no real concern. Their top management took in excess of $21 million last year. Their CEO over $10 million, just himself. So what the company said is, look, we need $8.8 million from you working people, so that we can keep paying our top five guys $21 million and our CEO $10 million. But you people down at the bottom, we need those cuts. We need them bad. Now understand, this is a company worth almost $27 billion. So this $8.8 million is a drop in the bucket. But what it was is it's that reason. It's that excuse. That excuse to go after their workers. And you look at these monster companies like Express Scripts and like Dr. Pepper Snapple. And they see this. They see the economy. They see people who are desperate. And they go, ha, ha, ha. We got them. Got them by the short hairs. They need us. And now we're going to stick it to them. And like Ray said, you know, I understand. If the company was in trouble, you got to help them. Because you need to keep them in business. And any union is going to give concessions to a company that needs it because they want their members to stay around. This notion that, well, unions put companies out of business is absolutely ludicrous. And only an idiot would buy into it, which is why the people on the right seem to buy into it so well. I mean, just think about it from a radical self-interest point of view. How does the union benefit from putting its members, its dues-paying members, out of work? How does that make any sense? But that's what the right keeps pushing. That's what the business community keeps pushing us. That the Center for Union Facts wants us to believe. A whole bunch of ridiculous nonsense. But I look at things like this Express Scripts. And this right here is a reason that we need labor law reform. And we need strike replacement laws. Right here. That's it.
And if you listen to him closely, what he said was, when you asked him specifically what he made, he said $33,000. I'm assuming there might be a couple hours of overtime. So round numbers, you're talking $30,000. That's about $15 an hour. Not overpaid, not at all. In today's economy,
no.
That's very much lower middle class. It's not
middle class.
It's lower middle class.
Yeah,
it's really not that much. It's not that much, depending on how many children. It's not that much above the poverty line.
And if you don't have health care, you're definitely not middle class.
And he said he was the highest paid. He was top rated. So that means that there are people making, who knows, it might be $10 an hour. Very, very much lower echelon paid. It's not like these people are overpaid.
The truth of the matter is I hate asking that question. I hate it, it's one of those things that I hate asking of somebody. But it's important to know just how little we're talking about here. And to a company that's worth almost $27 billion, $8.8 million is not an awful lot of money. And so I do believe that my view on this is accurate. And it was accurate from the beginning. It's, again, that moment of, let's see what we can get out of them. Let's see how far they'll go, and then we're going to move anyway.
Absolutely. And again, that is the dark side of capitalism. No controls. And as you said, you look at a lot of their businesses, and they're being supported by tax dollars. Millions and millions and millions worth of tax dollars, and yet there doesn't seem to be there doesn't seem to be any strings attached to it. They basically can pretty much do what they want.
I mean, this, think about it for a second. This drug company, this drug benefits company, they don't make anything. All they do is fill prescriptions, which you need to have. They are worth almost $27 billion. And you know, you look at the whole Comcast NBC Universal thing. I think NBC Universal's only worth about somewhere between $13 and $17 billion. And you go, really? Interesting stuff. I mean, you get into this, and it's just so frustrating that these workers are basically, without their union, they're helpless. They're fighting the good fight. They're taking this on. But at the end of the day, our labor laws are so badly antiquated. They're so far behind the times that the little guy doesn't really stand much of a chance against a mega corporation like this, which is why, again, I'm a big fan of bringing back the trust buster, bringing back the antitrust laws. Not bringing it back, enforcing them. We've already got them. They're on the books. But as these 1,000 people find their way to the street, because it looks like that's what's going to happen, what you're going to then see is you're going to see your tax revenues going away. This company's leaving the state. You're going to see tax revenues leaving the area. What does that mean? Well, that means more austerity. That means more pain. That means more cuts to libraries and fire departments. And you look here in Camden, New Jersey. Camden, New Jersey is expected to vote to lay off almost 400 workers, half of them police and fire. Talking about 200 policemen and firemen. Goodbye. Because they can't find $26 million to fill their deficit. So what then happens? Do you then have situations where buildings burn and no one shows up? I don't know.
Well, the irony is, on this economic downturn, just as when they started cutting programs for at-need people, when you start cutting services, basic services like firemen, and you're cutting at a time when you needed the most. And that's the irony. At a time when you actually, if you wanted to do what was right for society, you should be adding. They are subtracting. And that just exasperates that whole situation. And it just deteriorates the whole fiber of our society. When we talk about union issues, talk about dollars and cents, but in the end, what we're talking about is a spiraling down, deteriorating of our society.
Yep. One person's going to find a job this holiday season, though. Christine O'Donnell. You remember her? The one who, told you not to touch yourself? Well, she's evidently going to have a book deal with the St. Martin's Press. Trident Media Group CEO Dan Strone negotiated a deal with St. Martin's publisher Matthew Shearer. The book will embody O'Donnell's identification with America's frustrations and concerns with the current political climate. It will also explore how she beat a veteran politician in the 2010 U.S. Republican primary in Delaware, earning the support of Tea Party members across the country and plenty of media attention.
So she's planning on writing a fiction book, huh?
Yeah, that's going to be a pop-up. Maybe that'll touch her. O'Donnell had this statement: the 2010 midterm elections were just the beginning, the first rumblings of a revolution that's not fully erupted. I plan on making my book one of the revolution's catalysts. Oh, I just cannot wait. I can't wait to see who writes it for her, because I don't want to read a book that's written in crayon. So
well,
there you go.
I mean, she's holding to her lifetime record of not having a job. Can she go? Well, I mean, I wonder what the line is in Vegas. Can she go a whole life without having a real job, Rick? She's doing pretty good so far.
God bless her, you know? God bless her. Let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
Family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
Yes, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. That's the number if you've got something on your mind, question, comment. I don't know if you saw it today, but incoming House Speaker John Boehner dismissed House Democrats voting to extend middle-class tax cuts. Not the big handouts for the millionaire class, but for the working people, the 98% of the people who are below $250,000 per year. And I found it interesting what his comment was. Listen to this.
Trying to catch my breath so I don't refer to this this maneuver going on today as chicken crap, all right? But this is nonsense.
Chicken crap. That's what he calls extending unemployment, extending tax cuts for 98% of the country. Again, you go back to who is important to John Boehner. The vote this afternoon on just extending the tax breaks for you and I, the 98% who make under $250,000. It was 234-188. You had 20 Democrats who opposed it, and three Republicans voting for it. Now, look, at the end of this, it's going to go to the Senate, and it's not going to go anywhere. We already know that. The Republicans will block anything, not giving the wealthy their gift, their lottery winnings, if you will. Now, I understand the White House and the Senate Republicans have crafted some deal, and just as I said, we're going to see the top 2% get their windfall for 2 years. And this is what I love about this. I love how this nonsense goes. For the next 2 years, we're going to be giving $83 billion away to the top 2% each year. So for if you're making over $250,000, you can buy a Mercedes E-Class each of the next 2 years. Now, you folks who are unemployed, you're going to get 1 year of extended benefits. So that's a good deal, right? Don't you think? It's going to be about $50 billion for the working class, all the people who are struggling to make ends meet, about $50 billion for you, and almost $200 billion for people who are pretty comfortable. Thank you very much. Seems like a fair trade, don't you think? Fair trade?
No.
Oh, come on.
Well, isn't it a little worse than this? I mean, McConnell has said he's willing to block, use certain strategies to block every piece of legislation until they get what they want. Every piece. He said that just recently. I mean, if I was the Democrats, I mean, I don't know, at some point, there's going to be some kahunas in the Democrats. You're going to have to draw the line and say this is it.
I think like Strickland said, like Ted Strickland, the outgoing governor in Ohio, he says if we can't win this, we should just fold up our tents and go home. If we can't explain to 98% of the people in this country that we're giving you a tax break, and the only part of this Bush handout that we're not renewing is just that portion from 250 million up, from 250,000 all the way up. That's the only part that isn't getting. And even the millionaire class is going to get every one of those breaks from zero to 250,000. So they're still getting something. We're just not giving away that $83 billion a year. Now look, that means we're going to have to cut something somewhere, or we're going to have to borrow money. So cutting at a time when you need government spending to help the economy is not a great idea, and borrowing isn't a great idea. But we've got to give that pound of flesh. And evidently, as I said right from the beginning, that pound of flesh will be the billions for the billionaire class. And, oh, well, you can have a couple of crumbs, you folks at the bottom.
Well, and to really put perspective on it, you know, the White House Council of Economic Advisors came up with an updated forecast of what this means. We're talking 2 million if nothing's done by the end of the month, but 7 million over the next year. 7 million Americans. That's huge.
That is huge. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with John Smith from Honeywell. He's a representative of the United Steelworkers Local 7-669. We're right back after this.
Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
If you or a loved one has suffered a workplace injury, don't jeopardize your benefits by not fully knowing your rights. Don't be misled by those whose job it is to minimize your injury, your disability, your lifetime medical coverage, and your financial recovery. Order your free book by Calhoun Associates by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Get your copy of The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 717-695-4722.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's
That's Mike.
Call them at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. You know, earlier we talked with a worker at Express Script, a company that, you know, again, right from the beginning, you knew their main intention was to break the union and send the work elsewhere. And we've been talking about this situation with the Honeywell workers out in Metropolis, Illinois for some time as well. You know, I look at their CEO, this David Cote, $1.2 million he'll get from the Bush handouts if they extend the top 2% handout there. You know, in the state of Pennsylvania, that's 5,000 weeks of unemployment benefits that we're just, here you go, Dave. You're a good CEO. Sit on our debt commission. Amazing stuff. And it's just amazing to me. And the screw job that these workers are getting out there in Metropolis, Illinois is just amazing. And I've got John Smith on the line. He's one of those folks who works out there at Honeywell. He's a representative of United Steelworkers Local 7669. John, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, how you doing, Rick?
Tell me, what's going on?
Our president and myself were still in Washington for the rest of the night. We're going to go back home tomorrow and update our members on what we feel like we accomplished and what we didn't, and keep up the good fight.
So where are you now? I know you've been locked out. It's been, what, 5 months now?
Yeah, it's been a little over 5 months. We're still having no luck getting Honeywell to actually do real negotiating with us. I mean, they show up to negotiations, but we can't get anything accomplished. Because they're not actually wanting to negotiate. They're just wanting to argue.
Yeah, again, you know, another story of a company bargaining in bad faith, which to me sends the signal that our labor laws are badly broken and sorely in need of reform moving forward. But I don't see anything like that happening out of the Republican-controlled House this time around.
No, I don't either, and we definitely need that reform. You know, we offered to extend the old bargaining agreement until we reached a new one, and we also, you know, were available to work without a contract until we reached an agreement, but that still wasn't good enough, you know, and they locked us out.
So for the people who don't know, and they don't know anything about unions, and they really, you know, they really don't know what's going on. Basically, what you're saying is the contract expired. The company said, you know what, we're not going to let you work without a contract. You're going to have to go out. We're going to push you out the door and lock the doors behind you. Is that kind of what happened?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. Our contract actually ran out on June 22nd, at that point, the company expected us to strike, and when we told them we weren't interested in striking, we were interested in an agreement, we sat there for a week and stared at each other, and then they decided to, you know, kick us out the door.
And then what did they do?
After that, we negotiate with them. Well, we call negotiating with them about once a month, which we're not getting anything accomplished, and then we had health insurance for a while. At the end of October, they canceled our health insurance. I'm assuming as a strategy to try to get us to take the concessions that they're wanting us to take.
pretty much to starve you out. And then, as I understand, they brought in scabs and replaced you. And what you do is not the kind of job that you can just hire any Tom, Dick, or Harry off the street. It's a pretty complicated job, correct?
It is. And we're the only converters of uranium in the country. And since they've tried to start up, which they are producing something now, but they've had an explosion. They've had a release of UF6 gas that they say they contain, and they've had problems calculating their emissions to the atmosphere and calculating the public Gulf emissions, which are all available on the NRC website. They published their inspection reports, and their recent report had several violations at the plant, but they still allow them to run.
But here's what I don't understand. Why does the Nuclear Regulatory Commission allow them to run? I mean, if you've had these incidents in such a short period of time, you know that the company is working with scab labor. You know these people aren't properly trained. Why allow it to keep going forward?
And that's the same question we have, and hopefully we'll get an answer. The chairman of the NRC is making a visit to the Honeywell site this month, and so we're going to try to meet with him while he's there. But, you know, we have the same questions. It seems like a good analogy would be they're having a lot of fender benders right now, but, you know, it's only a matter of time before they have a head-on collision.
And they kill somebody.
Yeah, kill somebody and hopefully not poison the entire community around the plant.
Amazing stuff. You know, I read something recently, and help me if I'm wrong here, but I read that the company has spent almost $50 million on this, either spent or lost somewhere in the neighborhood of $50 million, denying you the workers $20 million over the next 3 years. Is that about right?
That's pretty close. They've probably spent more than that, trying to keep us out. But there's a broader picture, you know, because we're not the only organized facility that they have. So, you know, on the next, contract negotiation with the next plant, they can try to use us as an example. And, we're going to do our best to set an example for those, you know, other unions that are going to be going through the same thing.
Yeah, I got to be honest with you. I wish we would see more solidarity amongst working people. I've been calling for a nationwide strike at some point. Labor has got to exert some power at some point in the near future before it's all stripped away from us.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I think it was Benjamin Franklin that said, "If we don't hang together, we'll hang separately," and that's exactly the truth, and that's what's going to happen.
So let me ask you, you're down in Washington, D.C., you're doing a little bit of lobbying. What kind of response are you getting from the folks that you're talking to?
We're getting good response mostly. We visited with the office of Senator Dick Durbin a couple times, and he has wrote a letter before to, you know, to Honeywell and to, the you know, our union urging a settlement, which... we have no problem getting a settlement, but you have to negotiate to be able to do that.
Right.
We've also met with newly elected Senator Mark Kirk, and even though it probably wasn't our preferred choice for the winner of that election, his office was very receptive of us and have already followed up. So that was really good. We also visited with Congressman Edward Markey from Massachusetts, the Energy and Commerce Committee Subcommittee Co-Chair, and talk to them about the NRC violations. So, you know, there are people listening to us, but, you know, we're looking for more action than listening.
You know, I look at the guy who's the CEO of your company. He said, evidently he sits on the Deficit Commission, or as some people are calling it, the Cat Food Commission. And, you know, it's no wonder that we're seeing the kind of pain and suffering coming out of that commission for working people, and the massive tax breaks, and pretty much letting off of the hook of the top earners in this country, the wealthiest people in this country, given what you've laid out here tonight for me.
Yeah, and you know, there's a lot of things in that current proposal from that commission
But, you know, there's some things in there that are just not good for the workers. You know, you talk about raising the retirement age, and, you know, for a guy like Dave Cody, it's probably not a big deal for him to work an extra year. But for somebody out there, you know, doing manual labor, that could be a great deal. And, you know, so we went to that commission hearing yesterday, and we got an early exit whenever we tried to speak with Cody while he was talking. But, you know, and that's okay. We'll play by the rules, but eventually he's going to have to talk to us.
I sure hope so. You know, I look at this, and it's just amazing to me. Because as I understand it, some of the requirements that he's wanting you folks to give up your pension, wanting to give up health care for retirees, wage concessions, straight down the list, things that I think he knew right from the beginning there was no way you guys were going to go for.
Sure, he knew. And the disturbing thing is what they'd really like to do, and you know, we can all see the trend in labor, is they would like to set up a two-tiered union. And a two-tiered union is a broken union.
Yep.
And we're not ready to give up that fight, because when you start having the same work for not equal pay, then what's the purpose of having a union in the first place?
Well, the reason they do that is to put dissension in the ranks. I mean, that's the whole reason.
And then later on down the road, you know, when those people start to become the majority, are they going to fight for the benefits that they don't have? Probably not. So, you know, that's the first step to taking away what we have.
So let me ask you, how can we help? How can the people listening to this program help? What do we do?
If you want to help, you can definitely call your representative and ask for the plant to be shut down until we're back to work. You could also call the NRC, and you can call us. We appreciate all the support we get. You can visit our website. It's USW7-669.com. It's updated quite frequently, and we provide links to stories and reports that come out from the government agencies also, and what's going on with us. So, and, you know, anybody's welcome to send an email to the site, you know, or, you know, there's always something to do, and what we have to do is we have to quit talking and we have to start doing.
I'm right there with you. Just so I'm clear about this, and I want to make sure that people understand exactly what kind of work you guys do. Tell me exactly what it is that's done at that plant, because it's, as I understand, it's the only one in the country that does this kind of work.
Sure, the only one in the country, and there's only two in North America. The other one's in Canada, and there's only four in the Western world. And what we do is we take uranium ore that is mined from the ground, and we convert it to UF6 gas, which is then sent to a uranium enrichment facility to make nuclear fuel rods. So, you know, if we're going to go green and we're going to go nuclear and other, you know, green energy, we're going to be necessary. And there's irony in what we do, because since the lockout, the price on UF6 conversion has doubled, but the company remains the stance that they are not doing this for financial gain.
They're not doing it for financial gains? Then what the hell are they doing it for?
that's what we want to know. They say they want a contract that's fair and equitable and turns our facility profitable. What's funny is they keep making the statement that they've lost money for the last 10 years. And, you know, a CEO as bright as Dave Cody surely would not continue to invest in a place that loses money every year for 10 years. And they invested more money than you or I either, you know, you or I could fit in our homes in that place.
But here's the thing. Here's my question. If you're the only one in the country doing something and you're losing money, evidently you're doing something wrong.
Yeah, but you know, the thing is you know, if I expect to make
$10 off something, but I only make five. I didn't lose $5, but that's the way they see it.
Right.
You know?
Excellent point. Excellent point. John Smith, representative of USW Local 7669. I appreciate your time, buddy, and keep up the fight. And we'd love to have you back again real soon to get an update. Hopefully you guys are going to get back to work soon.
Okay. Thank you, Rick. Good talking to you. And we're going to continue to fight. And we hope that everybody else stands up for their rights also.
All righty. Again, the website, usw7669.com. We'll make sure we get a link at our site at therickSmithShow.com. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Defender of the working class majority. Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Prosperity, not austerity. That's the federal budget alternative for working people advanced by progressive economists and organizations. It's a budget blueprint for delivering fiscal responsibility without carving up our social safety net. And it's remarkably different from the deficit commission plan that does slash Social Security and Medicare and ignores the need for job creation while not touching Wall Street. Tamara Draught is Vice President of Policy and Programs at Demos, a nonpartisan public policy research and advocacy organization based in New York City. She says without jobs, there's no hope of erasing the deficit in federal debt, and she says a financially responsible federal budget can be created without hurting working people, the elderly, and the poor.
Our answer is, in the short term, we have to focus on economic recovery. So our blueprint makes a major down payment on job creation and public investment to get the economy going again. What is hurting working people the most is we aren't creating jobs, and two, that the basic essentials from the need to pay for childcare to health care have gone through the roof while earnings have been stuck in place. So unless we solve some of those fundamental imbalances, working people are going to continue to get a raw deal. We set out to figure out how can we do right by the American people and get on a sustainable fiscal path. And I think our blueprint shows you can do it, and you don't have to slash social insurance, and you don't have to cut important programs that help seniors and low-income people.
Members of the Deficit Commission, meanwhile, will vote on whether to approve the co-chairman's proposal on Friday. Are employers finally starting to add jobs? Jesse Russell takes a look.
It's still too early to say if corporations are finally ready to start sharing some of their record profits with the jobless. But numbers released on Wednesday by payroll company ADP paints a rosier-than-expected picture. In November, private sector payroll saw their largest increase in 3 years, clocking 93,000 jobs, up by 11,000 over October. The U.S. government will release November's official job numbers on Friday, and economists are projecting as many as 153,000 jobs will be added. Payrolls need to be adding 150,000 jobs per month to simply keep up with new workers entering the job market. Meanwhile, the big three U.S. automakers all saw a profitable month in November. GM was up 11%, Ford was up 20%, and Chrysler was up 17%. And it isn't simply the U.S. automakers that made gains last month. Hyundai, Honda, and Nissan were all able to claim an upward tick in U.S. auto sales. Toyota, on the other hand, was left out of the good news with a 3.3% decline in U.S. auto sales. Still, auto industry analysts are hesitant to say the industry is on a rebound, but signs are definitely pointing in the right direction.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Back. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Also, remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. You know, we were talking about Express Scripts earlier, And now we see this, the Express Times reports. A Monroe County pharmacy facility will close at the end of January, leaving 50 people unemployed, according to state officials. ChemRx, which is a long-term care pharmacy on Route 209 there in Scioto, that is Hamilton Township, up in Monroe County, filed notice of shutting down with the Pennsylvania Department of Labor and Industry. Of its 50 employees, 39 are represented by the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, Local 348S, according to the state notice. The company expects that the facility will close and the jobs will be eliminated on January 31st. ChemRx packages and delivers prescriptions and non-prescription drugs, intravenous medication, medical equipment, and medical supplies. So, you know, what we're seeing across the country, and it's, you know, it's just not one or two places. This is an entire movement of destroy anything where workers have a say. Destroy anything where there's a collective bargaining agreement. And, you know, we point to story after story after story. And why are they doing this? Well, they can. They're doing it because we have a business-friendly climate going on right now where business is never wrong. And business is following their self-interest. And this is what we end up with. We end up with reasonable paying jobs. And, you know, these aren't great jobs. We're talking $20, $25 an hour. We're talking maybe $12, $15, maybe. But, you know, we're moving toward minimum wage nation for most working people.
You're absolutely right. You look at the numbers. And I love these people that say, well, it's the unions that drove the jobs overseas. I think this is an appropriate time to talk about it. I went into an appliance store today, and I asked them if they would be willing to contribute to our project. And they said they can't. Their business is really bad. And I asked her, you know, how she's doing. She says, no. She said the economy's bad. Our business is bad. And, you know, I said, we need to keep jobs in this country. And she said, well, you know, we're making too much, and because of the unions, and then I didn't argue with her. I just gave her my opinion. But isn't it amazing that people think that one of the problems in this country is the unions got their people too much money, when in fact, if you look at the numbers, the truth is the government numbers since 1978, if you factor in inflation, wages have gone down. They have gone down, yet there's this perception, and the Republicans are good at propagating it, that, well, you know, it's those union people, those greedy union people. Yet we've taken it on the chin. And that's been accelerated in the last 10 years since you have been in the Bush administration. But yet there's that perception that drives me nuts. Oh, and here's another one. Oh, well, there's too much regulation. That's why these companies went overseas. And you try to explain, no, they went overseas because we were crazy enough to give them a tax incentive to take our jobs overseas, because the Congress of the United States, in their infinite, they would call it infinite wisdom, I would call it infinite stupidity, said that we should engage in free trade, which has been an absolute disaster. But yet, my point is this, there's these myths out there that so many Americans believe, Rick. And it's been propagated for decades and decades, and yet, there we are. People who should know better, you know, they just don't. And it's so frustrating when you engage people. And these are intelligent people. These are not dumb people.
Really? You
think? They are just, well, no, I'm being fair here. They're not, it's one thing.
Like you're being generous.
It's one thing not to have the ability to learn and have a decent IQ. It's another thing to be just plain.
Well, I mean, you go through life with blinders on. You go through life believing one set of rules. And if someone could show me where there's actual statistical evidence, empirical data that says that, you know, unions drive people, drive companies out of the country, I may change my opinion.
Well,
but the reality is that's not it. There's more profit to be made overseas, because no American worker can make an existence in this country for what the Chinese and the Indians and the Malaysians and the people who live in Guatemala and Sri Lanka, what they can live on. You cannot compete. But, you're on two entirely different planes.
But my point is this. I mean, we talk about it all the time. You talk about it constantly, this constant constriction of those who control the flow of information. And some of it isn't these people's fault. Some of it is. Some of it isn't. But they get this constant flow of information. How many times have you heard that? The unions are the bad guys. The unions are the bad guys. Listen to Fox News. You listen to the Republicans. You listen to many people in the, I don't know about many, some people within the business community. There are enlightened people in the business community, especially small business, who understand, you know, you need people with decent jobs who can earn income so they can come in and buy what we sell, whatever it is, whether it's a restaurant or whether it's an appliance.
Yeah, I love those small business people who have that attitude, especially people who don't actually make a product, people who sell things. I love that mentality for those folks, because I love telling them that, well, it's those wages that those greedy union people that you seem to be bashing, it's those wages that they earn and the disposable income that they used to have that allow people like you who start up, put out your own shingles, start up your own thing, which, great, fantastic for you. But that's money they used to spend here helping you support your family. That's the thing that gets me, is this total disconnect between the two very distinct realities. And if everybody made close to nothing, or minimum wage close to nothing, in my opinion, would people be buying the appliances that this person was selling? Would people be buying from these small businesses? And the answer is no.
But then you talk to some of them. They not only understand about good jobs, they understand about what's happening politically. And if I was today, if I was a small businessman and I knew what was going on, and you should, if you're a member of the Chamber of Commerce, you should know what's happening in your organization. And I would know, and there's no reason why they shouldn't know, what the U.S. Chamber of Commerce has done in the last year. I would exit that organization tomorrow, because they are absolutely turning their backs on these small businesses, because they are pushing more and more and more and more jobs out of the country to benefit the members in other countries.
And well, they're pandering to the multinationals.
Well, absolutely.
Because that's where the big dues money comes from.
Absolutely. And here's the thing, what bothers me. We've talked about it. Certainly members of Congress have. You listen to certain TV networks and you hear it. Why isn't there at least efforts to conduct an investigation into why we have allowed the Chamber of Commerce to bring in money from outside companies in other countries into the electoral process? Now, the Chamber of Commerce, you know, they plead innocent, but we all know what happened. I mean, it was a shell game. It was a con game. They said, well, we didn't directly use that money. Yes, but you used the money which they gave to you, and you manipulated the system so that added money coming from the companies in other countries actually did have a direct impact in our elections. Why isn't there a congressional investigation? It just defies logic.
Spineless Democrats. Oh, you know, it's the whole reason they didn't impeach Reagan. Because there was a movement to impeach Reagan, if you remember. But the leadership at the time, having really gone after Nixon, didn't want to get into a spiral of going after every Republican president. Now, the Republicans, they would have no problem with that. You know, when they went after Clinton, there was never a doubt that they were going to go after Obama.
Yeah, and he was really subversive. He lied under oath about sex and marriage. Now, there's a first. I mean, that's really subversive. Well, I mean, honestly, why were the Democrats so limp-wristed in the year 2000? Look what happened down in Florida. Oh, my God.
Because you had a limp-wristed guy at the top of the ticket. I mean, look, you had Al Gore, who, you know, not somebody that I would, you know, really want to be in a back alley helping defend me. And traitor Joe Lieberman. I mean, really, not a fighting team there. And you had Bush and Cheney. Give me Cheney in a fight any day. Unless it means going to war. Anyway.
or shooting straight.
Well, just duck. Oh, I'm sorry, I said the wrong word. He might shoot at that.
They call him the hunter now.
Yeah. Well, you know you got power when you shoot somebody in the face and the person who gets shot apologizes to you.
Yeah, and the cops don't come for 24 hours. Yeah. That's power.
So you can sober up. But you know what's funny? I just saw that he's been indicted in Nigeria.
Yeah.
Because the company that he was the CEO of. And, you know, you knew he was as crooked as the day is long. And he bribed some officials there. And, yeah, he's probably as guilty as sin, but do you think he's ever going to be held to account for it? No. We are never going to send a former vice president to another country to stand trial. Just not going to happen. Anyway. The State Department of Labor and Industry warned this week that the failure of Congress to extend unemployment compensation would create another wave of job losses and economic woe, according to the Patriot. During a conference call with members of the media, the department's secretary, Sandy Vito, made the case that unemployment compensation supports other jobs, citing research that every $1 in unemployment has $2 in economic impact. While the unemployment picture has improved modestly over the past few months, there remain 4 to 5 seekers for every job that is currently open. Typically, an unemployed worker receives 26 weeks of unemployment compensation with an average payment, get this, of $240 a week. You know, we've been saying $300. It's actually worse than that. It goes on to say to mitigate the impact of the recession, that has been extended to 99 weeks for those who were unemployed in the early days of the recession. So when the Bush recession started, those initial 700,000, they lost their jobs. They've been unemployed the entire time. And then in October, when you lost another 700,000, in November, when you lost another 700,000, and in December, when you lost hundreds of thousands more, in January, in February, in March, when we were losing 600,000-700,000 jobs per month because we were in a free fall, an absolute free fall. The economy was collapsing. And what Obama did came in, stopped that collapse. And now slowly we're moving out of it. The newspaper report goes on to say 86,000 Pennsylvanians are projected to lose their unemployment benefits, more than all of those benefits expired in the previous 11 months. Ms. Vito warned that the expiration of benefits would slow the economy, increase the foreclosure rate, and put a greater strain on social services. Ms. Vito said historically Congress has extended benefits when national unemployment was 8% or greater. In September, joblessness in Woodbury-Scranton area was 9.9%. The state unemployment rate is 9.6%. You look at the fact that I'm still mind blown that they have not extended these benefits, and it's. Again, it's what are we going to have to give up for it? How much is it going to cost us down the road? And we know the answer. It's going to be billions for the investor class. Let's take a quick break. We're going to come back with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK,
888-520-7425. Come to talk.
Here's a crime drama, tragedy, and farce all in one play. First comes the perpetrator, Martin Erzinger. A well-heeled wealth manager in Morgan Stanley Smith Barney's Denver office, Erzinger handles more than $1 billion in private assets and describes himself as, quote, dedicated to ultra-high net worth individuals. Now, Dr. Stephen Milo comes on stage and the drama quickly turns to tragedy.
Milo, a surgeon and father of two, was bicycling in Colorado last July when, wham, he was struck from behind by Erzinger. Instead of stopping to render aid, the money man sped away in his Mercedes-Benz. But his car was damaged by the crash, so he finally had to pull over and call the Mercedes service center to have it towed. But he didn't ask for an ambulance to check on the poor guy he had just run over. As Dr. Milo later noted, Erzinger struck me, fled, and left me for dead. The doctor did survive, but he suffered spinal cord injuries, bleeding from his brain, knee damage, and disabling spinal headaches. He faces multiple surgeries, plastic surgery, and lifetime pain. Next, District Attorney Mark Hurlburt enters from stage right, and high tragedy devolves into low farce. The DA announced that he was dropping felony charges against Erzinger, instead only citing him for two misdemeanor traffic violations. Why? Because Erzinger is rich. Noting that the money handler could lose his prestigious Morgan Stanley position, the compassionate DA said, "Felony convictions have some pretty serious job implications for someone in Mr. Erzinger's profession, and that entered into my decision." This is Jim Hightower saying, "Wow, what a humanitarian! I'm guessing that a felony conviction also would have some pretty serious job implications for any low-wage working stiff who nearly killed someone, though I doubt the DA would give a damn in that case."
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
You know, one of the things I've been saying we need to do is we need to invest in a new technology, research and development. We need to rebuild our infrastructure. We need to do things like the Carlisle School District did. And you got to give them credit for having a little bit of vision, a little bit of foresight to put up a solar array to help offset some of the costs for the future. As I understand it, the entire Bel Air Elementary School will be energy independent, and they will be selling energy back to the grid because of this solar array that they've put up. So no energy costs for them. In fact, they're going to be able to sell the excess back to the grid and make a profit, and it's going to end up paying it for itself, and it's going to save taxpayers money. For me, you got to think, well, you know, that's a great thing to do. It's going to save us money. It's going to help us not use so much energy. Good stuff, right? I think so. So when I saw this report that said solar jobs on the rise, and that Pennsylvania is the second leading state in the country, that I got to be honest, that's good stuff. Based on data collected from about 2,500 solar employers, the report found that as of August, the U.S. solar industry employed about 90,000 solar workers. Pennsylvania had an estimated 6,700. Solar workers, second only to California, and their 36,000. And, of course, numbers weren't available for Erie County. By August 2011, nearly 24,000 new jobs are anticipated to be added in the solar industry, according to this report. And I'm saying, you know, we should be doing this as a matter of common sense. We should be encouraging businesses to build the solar panels right here in Pennsylvania, and use them here. This would have been something that I thought the state government should have done. We've got all these school districts. We've got all these state buildings. Why not invest the money in doing that, put people back to work? Simple, simple stuff.
And I guess at the end of the day, the question is why? Why? This would be a win-win-win. We reduce our consumption of oil. We'd produce jobs, and we could help these local school districts and municipalities. Why wouldn't this be a basic approach?
Well, at the end of it, look, it's the same reason that Fox News went ballistic over the Chevy Volt. And if you listened the other day, I think it was Tuesday, I was at the gym, watching them just go on and on about how this was the worst car in the world, and you know how you know nobody's bought one, and how the government forced it down our throats, and you know you just on and on ad nauseum this hatred. And at the end of it, what it is, it's, you know, they're funded by the oil companies and the coal companies. That's what it is. The dirty energy industries are the ones that are supporting them. Why? Because, you know, they know if they can change the discussion. And that's all they want to do. They're not saying that solar power is bad or that these hybrids are bad. They just need to change the discussion. And change it enough to where you say, well, you know, well, maybe that car isn't cost effective yet. You know, maybe it's not what it's cracked up to be. And that's all they want to do. And that's all this Fox News report was. It was just bashing the Chevy Volt, which, you know, I got to be honest. I think it's a step forward. It's amazing stuff. But we don't have that kind of, and I fear that as a society, we don't have that long range vision that entrepreneurial vision of what could be. And, you know, this could have been, it still can be. I mean, there's an opportunity. We haven't missed the boat yet. I mean, the Chinese are taking over. You can say that, you know, Pennsylvania is number two with a couple of thousand workers, but the Chinese, they're just pouring money into this. And you know, we better do something about it, and quickly, I think. But here we go. So that's the solar panel thing, I don't know.
Well, we look at the situation with jobs today, Rick, and sometimes it seems daunting. When you really step back and you think of the logic, and you think of the things that we could do to create millions of jobs. Now, I'm not saying it's going to be easy because of the politics involved. It's not. But when you look at things like blue-green jobs, we have the technology now. We have the technology now. And between labor and some progressives in government, you know, they're projecting 4 million jobs, 4 million good-paying jobs. You look at solar. There's no reason why Pennsylvania can't be a leader in that industry and create tens upon tens of thousands of good-paying jobs. The sun. No one owns the sun.
Not yet. That's
no
the,
one. Although
we can't have it.
If there's a corporation out there that could, they would.
that's the reason we can't have.
What are we gonna have? We're gonna have this big giant box where we put what $10 in for sunlight that day, or?
Well, you know, if they could,
they're gonna send you a bill.
If they could figure out, we'd have solar power immediately. If they could figure out how to charge you for it, they'd figure out how to do it. And we would have solar energy, especially because it is cheap. You wouldn't have to dig it up. I mean, that's the amazing thing here, is that we've just kowtowed to these corporations. There's got to be a profit motive in everything. You can't.
And then you look at the situations like this, and then sometimes you and I get angry at people, and I do this sometimes, because people just say, I ain't voting. You've heard this a thousand times. So have I. Oh, they're all crooks. I ain't voting. They don't do anything. And you say, well, no, you got to vote. You got to get involved in the system. And I do believe that. I truly, truly do believe that. At the end of the day, as Americans.
They're crooks, yes, but there are crooks.
As Americans, the average citizen, you know, the conservatives like to talk about, they're the highest office holder. They're citizens. How many times have you heard the T-Bagger say that? No. Well, the truth is, you know, they're not wrong. I think they're coming at it in the wrong perspective, but they're not wrong. The average citizen really has to take hold of their own democracy. But the solutions are not that difficult. The solutions are there. What has made it difficult is the entrenched, very well-funded corporations and bureaucracies. And at the end of the day, it's this insidious negative influence of money and politics.
Now, you know, I look at this solar thing, and I always think about Germany. Because Germany is a country that doesn't have an awful lot of days of sunlight. They're on this days of sunlight chart. They're somewhere near the middle bottom.
I would have thought they're
no.
They're a little less north of us.
They have more overcast days than most, from what I understand. yet they produce a larger portion of their national energy from solar than anyone on the globe. And I've read stories where, look, you know, they've really dedicated themselves to solar power. So much so that, you know, all the billboards that are on the highways, and you know, we've got those silly billboards with their messaging. Those billboards are photovoltaic cells. And yes, they've got the messaging over it, but they're also capturing sunlight and producing energy.
Wow.
They figured out every home, you know, I would say the last report I saw was about half of the homes in Germany, their rooftops were covered in solar panels. Because they had a smart thing. They did a very smart policy thing. They said, we're going to give you low interest loans. The bank is going to charge you 1% just to cover their transaction fees. The banks aren't going to make any money off of this, but they're going to cover their costs. And that's what the interest rate's going to be. And you borrow as much money as you need, and you've got 10 years to pay it back. And to encourage conservation, they said, when you put these panels up, everything that you don't use, the grid has to buy back at 7 times the going rate. 7 times the going rate for that 10-year period. While the loan, and in essence, what happens if you're conscious and you conserve a little bit, you can pay the loan off by not taking any money out of your pocket.
It encourages you to conserve energy.
And it does a couple of very smart things.
Innovative.
It gets you off the grid. It gets you independent. And it gets you thinking about conservation. How can I save energy so that it's going to save me some money down the road? These are good, smart policies, things that I think states across this country should be doing. And I think this is something the states have to do. I think it's a dictate that the federal government should say, here's some grant money. Do it in your own best way, and we'll see which state wins out, which one does, and use a best practices approach. And try a whole bunch of different things. That's what's great about this country. We have, you know, there are more than one ways to skin a cat, they used to say. Even though I shouldn't say that because we've got a cat, who I'm not a big fan of. Not that I would skin it. But, you know, there are different approaches to this. And I think we could possibly stop giving money to people who hate us. The OPEC nations, for one. You want to talk about a cartel. There, my friends, is a cartel. But smart policy, back to what I said originally. Smart policy, smart investment, common sense as far as I'm concerned. We're going to take a quick break, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We are AFSCME.
That old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's
That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
You know, you may remember during the campaign, the T-Twizzlers out there pushing this anti-earmark alarm, and they pushed it early and often. And look, it made a great campaign slogan. It was an amazing campaign slogan. You got people thinking, oh, there's all this money being wasted. There are these earmarks. You know, like kind of like earwax, only worse. So the Tea Party, you know, they made their political hay on earmarks. And if you read the National Journal report today, the headline reads, Tea Party Caucus Takes $1 Billion in Earmarks. Oops. Members of the Congressional Tea Party Caucus, you know, the thing that Michelle Bachmann, my girlfriend's in charge of, they took a $1 billion. And the article says they may tout their commitment to cutting government spending now, but they used the 111th Congress to request hundreds of earmarks that, taken cumulatively, added more than $1 billion to the federal budget deficit, according to a hotline review of records compiled by Citizens Against Government Waste. The 52 members of the caucus, which pledges to cut spending and reduce the size of government, requested a total of 764 earmarks valued at $1,449,783,150 during the fiscal year 2010. Dave Williams, vice president of policy at Citizens Against Government Waste, said it's disturbing to see the Tea Party caucus request that much in earmarks. This is their time to put up or shut up, to be blunt. He went on to say there's going to be a huge backlash if they continue to ask for more earmarks. In founding the caucus in July, Michelle Bachmann said she was giving a voice to Americans who were sick of government overspending. Now, remember, she herself asked for some earmarks, and I'll be honest with you, I was in favor of them. They were good earmarks. They were good projects. A road, a bridge, hospital, good stuff. And I got to be honest, I think a lot of these, you go down the list of the earmarks for each one of these people, and I'll tell you, most of them were probably pretty good. Most of them built roads or bridges or funded something that needed to be funded. The majority of them, I would say. Now, you're always going to come up with a couple that you go, man, that's pretty stupid. And I think I have found one. Kentucky's Democratic governor, according to the Courier Journal there in Kentucky, announced this week that a creationism theme park dubbed Ark Encounter is expected to open in the state in 2014. The governor boasted that the park would have a $250 million impact on the local economy annually. The park will feature a 500-foot-long wooden replica of Noah's Ark. And here's the funny part of it. When they're announcing this stuff, one of the people in the audience said, are there going to be dinosaurs on the Ark? To which they answered, yes. You gotta love when they play that stuff together. Anyway, before we move on, let's go to the phone lines. We got Mike on line one. How are we doing tonight, Mike?
Pretty good, Rick. How's it going tonight?
Oh, fantastic. What's on your mind?
Hey, I'm in graduate school right now, and we're doing a study on different countries and what their plans are for becoming energy independent, and we've been putting a lot of time into what Sweden has done and is presently doing. And they, back in 2005, commissioned a group to essentially cut their complete use of oil. So in other words, they were going to become an oil-free society, 100%, and that was their goal. What ended up happening was in 2006, just before their general election, they came up with a report, and essentially their four reasons, main reasons, were the impact of the oil prices on the economic growth and employment of the country. Gee whiz, you know, why aren't we thinking of this stuff?
Well, because we got people like Dick Cheney, who was vice president for 8 years. We got somebody like Ronald Reagan, who was president for 8 years. We've got all these people who were put into place by the oil industry. That's why.
Well, and the worst thing was, is, you know, to show how well their government works together, the incumbents lost that election in 2006. The incoming folks essentially said, okay, we like the idea, but here's what we decided we think is more reasonable. And what they came up with was by 2020 saying that they were going to reduce consumption of road transport by 40 to 50%. And they're going to do this in 10 years. They're going to reduce oil consumption in the industry sector by 25 to 40%. They're going to reduce oil for heating and clothing to zero. They phased 70% of that stuff out after the 73 oil crisis. So essentially what they're going to do now is say, okay, by 2020, no more buildings will be heated with oil.
Right. Well, they learned the lessons that didn't.
Sure. And they're essentially saying that they're also going to reduce, their complete energy usage by 20%. And when they put this in front of the national auto industry there, they immediately got on board with it. There was no pissing and moaning, no crying about how they were going to lose, you know, they were going to lose any kind of economic business or anything. They essentially said, okay, yeah, this is what's good for the country. We're going to get on board with this. We'll come up with new ideas. We understand that you're going to have to buy vehicles, and we're just going to have to come up with an idea on how this is going to work.
Yep. Well, and the difference, I guess, there is they've got people who are in powers, positions of power and CEO boardrooms who care about the country. I argue we've got people in Washington who could care less about the direction of this country just as long as they win.
Yeah.
You got people in CEO boardrooms who don't care about this country just as long as their pockets are full.
Yep. No, and it's unfortunate. Yeah, I mean, the writing is on the wall. It's been on the wall for a long time. And it seems like some very intelligent people are just kind of disregarding the warning signs. You know, it's like, you know, having cancer and seeing that you're dying and saying, you know, screw it.
I'm going to have that last cigarette.
Yeah, exactly. Precisely.
You know, and the thing is, if you remember during the Bush years, we had a commission that came out with a national plan. And the only thing that the Republicans focused on is one of the things the guy said was, we need to build the rooftops of buildings white. That's a step in the right direction. Because all the blacktop absorbs heat and it heats up, the building. So if you paint it white, you're gonna cool the top of the building by a couple degrees. That's all they focused on. They focused on mocking, the entire report was mocked and set aside, even though it did a lot of the things that you're talking about. It wanted to do a lot of the things, get us off the oil, build solar panels, build wind, do all these things. But all the Republicans focused on was that one thing that they could ha-ha away.
Yeah, well, it's unfortunate because, you know, this isn't something that's just going to go away. It's going to continue to get worse, and the longer we ignore it, the worse it's going to get and the harder it's going to be for folks to make a transition.
Yep.
Because this isn't like, you know, we're going to just turn the tap back on. We're going to find something else underground that we don't know is there. I mean, we know everything that's there. We know where it is. And, you know, it's getting to a point now where the easy oil has been taken out of the ground. Now it's going to become a lot more difficult to pull this stuff out and refine it.
And more costly.
Precisely, which means we're going to end up paying more for energy, which means the economy as a whole is going to suffer. Because everybody's got to charge more.
Yep. And what I've said is the oil has been the great the wealth divider. It has sucked the middle class dry because you still got to get to work. You still got to everything that just about everything we use is petroleum based. You got to heat your homes. You got to turn the lights on. All that stuff costs money, and it's all a way to get into your pocket.
Yep. Well, it's amazing.
It is amazing.
I appreciate it. Completely baffles me.
It baffles me too. I appreciate the information. Thank you so much.
Forever. Have a good one.
Thanks so much. You look at the reality in this, and you know I remember the Sweden thing, and I kind of remember them wanting to be completely off the oil, and I remember at the time saying I don't know that's going to happen. We can never get off the oil completely in this country. But it would be nice to say, you know what, like Carter said, we're never going to use more than we did in 1977. Even though that didn't hold to be true because thanks to Reagan in 80, all the things that we did to, or in 81, all the things that we did to start down that path, he immediately undid and said, here you go, boys, going back to oil, going back to the oil fields.
Yeah, and the ramifications were even further than you think. Think about the car industry. And in the early 80s, the American car manufacturers made a huge mistake. Instead of going the way that the public really wanted, the wave of the future and the small economical cars that the Japanese started making in huge numbers around that time, what did they do? They emphasized the big, we used to call them boats. The bigger cars, the low mileage cars. Why? Because they made more per unit. And the Japanese just came in, and that was the beginning of some real problems for our auto industry.
And a lot of that had to also do with our currency problems as well. We had a very high dollar at the time, so it made imports cheaper. If you remember that, we had a very high currency. So that the Japanese could bring things in cheaper from the currency, much like we're going through with China right now. Their currency's undervalued, and they're holding their currency down. I don't know that Japan did that so much as it was a structural thing, but you know the dollar was significantly higher. And when Reagan came in, he had a high dollar policy, which you know he wanted the stronger dollar. And what that did is that forced a lot of companies out of business and overseas. And that's when we saw really the first wave of globalization and companies leaving the country in mass. And then, you know, when NAFTA and then the WTO and all that stuff came in, then we saw the second wave, which was really the most destructive wave. But, you know, for me, you know, I look at this, you look at this debt commission's report, not one thing about trade in that entire proposal. Not one thing.
Well, it's ironic you talked about it. The president of the steelworkers was on television yesterday, and he was outraged about the one provision in there. There's a proposal that would change the way corporate taxes are levied. In effect, what it would do, amazingly, just unbelievably, it would exempt the corporation's foreign profits from domestic taxation.
That's
the
amazing.
The exact opposite of what we should be doing.
Yeah.
I mean, again, it.
You're going, you get this straight. Let me get this straight. I can take my company overseas and bring all the profits back into the country without having to worry about paying any taxes? So what is the disincentive to leave? There isn't one.
There is none.
Amazing stuff, man.
I guess some of those people are infected by insanity. I mean, it's free trade. They keep saying the answer is more and more and more of it, and it has failed.
You ever heard the saying, you know, what the best thing about, stopping when you hit your head against the wall? That if, you know, the best thing about, you know, hitting your head against the wall is that it feels so good when you stop. At some point, we need to stop. In fact, let's take a quick break here, right here. We're right back after this. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Radio of 4M.
and by We the Working People. The Rick Smith Show.
The steel strike of 1919 was called the Hunky Strike because most of the workers were either first or second generation immigrants from Eastern and Central Europe. Up until the end of World War I, workers had benefited from shorter hours, better pay, and the promise of union recognition. Once the war came to an end, the mill owners pursued anti-union open shop policies and other cost-cutting measures. During the strike, there was near total suppression of all civil liberties. Major work issues included the 12-hour day, the 7-day work week, scores of workers being injured and maimed, union recognition, and poverty wages. Mary Harris, better known as Mother Jones, fought tirelessly throughout her life for social justice and human rights as a labor leader and a worker advocate. On August 20th, while visiting striking miners in Homestead, Pennsylvania, home of U.S. Steel's famous Homestead Steelworks, she defied injunctions against public gatherings and addressed 5,000 striking workers and their families. This speech led to her being arrested and jailed for giving an unauthorized speech. When brought before the judge, she was asked who had signed a permit to speak at a public gathering. She answered, Patrick Henry, Thomas Jefferson, and John Adams. As the strike went on, Mother Jones, the grandmother of all agitators, gave many speeches to rally the workers. One speech in Chicago was described by a spy for the U.S. War Department's Military Intelligence Division as the foulest and most profane that can be imagined, teeming with ultra-radical suggestions. Welcoming the spies, she would invite them to the front of the crowd so they could report her words accurately. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center of IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Keeping the Chambers of Commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out our website at therickSmithShow.com. Also, December 18th through the 24th. Again, we're going to be talking about this all the way up into the date, to the 18th, and doing our program from the location for the week there before Christmas. We're going to be doing Hungry and Homeless for the holidays. Again, the website, hungryandhomeless.org. There's a spot there for you to contribute a couple of bucks to our plan here. I want to thank our friends at AFSCME Local 2456 for donating a portion of a skid to us. Also, a couple of private donors are helping with our Skid Row promotion. If you want more information about that, again, hungryandhomeless.org is the place to go. We are going to be living in the giant parking lot there at 255 South Spring Garden Street in Carlisle. For those of you watching on the tubes, they're on the internet watching through our Ustream video. You can watch this entire event 24/7 the entire time we're out there. So if your thing is watching some dopey guy sleep in a cardboard box in the middle of a supermarket parking lot at 3 o'clock in the morning, you can do it.
I wonder if they're going to pick up your snoring, Rick.
Mine, heck, there'll be no volume. It'll be watching you, and the camera will be shaking. What are you talking about, snoring, Mr. the Jake Rule? Anyway, big surprise here. Republican Senators Tom Coburn and Mike Crapo today said that they will back the Presidential Commission's plan to cut $4 trillion from the U.S. deficit, saying rising debt threatens the American way of life. Again, are you surprised? And, you know, again, like I said, not one mention of our out-of-whack, insane trade policies, not one. We can cut taxes for millionaires and billionaires. We can let corporations completely off the hook. We can let them repatriate profits. No, we're not going to touch any of that. But your health care benefits, you're going to pay tax on every penny of that. You, that working stiff. You're the one who's going to pay it. Because this commission is set up and you know, they're going to push their beliefs, which is to shift the responsibility onto you and me. Because the wealthy have lobbyists. The very wealthy have ways to get to these folks. They donate to the campaigns. And I'm telling you, this isn't going to pass. We know they're not going to get 14 of the 18 to agree on it. It's just not going to happen. But even the fact that they're coming out with it and some of the things that they're talking about, like cutting the tax code down from 5 brackets to 3 brackets, 8% for the lowest income, 14% for the middle class, and all the way down to 23% for the wealth class. Again, you know, raising it up just a little bit on everybody else except for the rich people. And what's interesting to me, they want to do away with some of the popular tax breaks. You know, like the tax break that your employer gets for giving you health care? What they want to do is they want to tax it all. Not just the Cadillac plans. They want to do away with the deduction altogether. And it reminds me of that tax reform bill of 86. You know, some people are saying, oh, it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. Well, yeah. And you know what it did, folks? All you people who are unemployed and you're going to have to pay federal tax on that, you can thank Ronald Reagan for that.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. I believe they want to eliminate the minimum tax, which is a tax which was designed.
The alternative minimum tax,
which is designed to get people who were able to avoid most of the, if not all, taxes.
Like General Electric.
Well, it tends to be nothing. People who are shrewd enough to have enough deductions to avoid all taxes. So as a matter of fairness, they said, look, I mean, you got to pay something.
Yep.
And they want to eliminate that. And why would you want to, at a time where we're in debt up to our ears now, why would you want to lower the basic corporate income tax?
The idea.
Other than political philosophy.
The idea, again, is going back to the reason that they used for Kennedy dropping it down to 70% from 92. That more people they'd be more willing to pay 72% than 90. And then we went down from 70 to 50 under the same guise. Well, that the wealthy will then, you know, they'll pay the 50% where they weren't paying the 70%. Then we went down to 39%. Well, they'll pay the 39, they won't pay the 50. And then we went down to 35%. Well, you know, the message changed a little bit. They'll use that money to create jobs. Well, that didn't work. And now we're going to take it down to 23%. Because, well, you know, they'll be more willing to pay 23%. Look, if they've got the means to get out of paying it, they're going to get out of paying it. Doesn't matter what the rate is. And, you know, you look at our deficits. You look at our national debt. It's directly tied to the handouts that we've given to the wealth class, that we've, again, not learned the lessons of history and allowed an aristocracy in this country to form in the way of a wealth class. And the tax code, again, you know, I always go back to the tax code because that's how you level out a society. That's how you make policy. That's how you encourage certain behavior and you discourage other. For me, I think there should be a 20% tax on cigarettes and booze and fast food and soda and all of that stuff. All that stuff that's going to kill you. Because you're going to pay for it one way or another. Society's going to pay for it. And, you know, the fact that I'm overweight, I know a ton of my friends are, you know, I know people who are overweight, you know, all the stuff that you eat, all the hamburgers, all the soda that you drink, all that stuff is going to cost society at some point. And I'm going to tell you, you know, going to McDonald's and spending the buck on the whatever they got there, an extra 2 or 3 cents on that buck is not going to kill you, and it's not going to stop McDonald's from selling hamburgers. What it's going to do is it's going to put money into the coffer to take care of your sorry behind when you get sick. That, to me, is very simple, smart policy. And you know what? If it discourages a couple of people from going 6 days a week to McDonald's or Burger King or wherever, you know, McDonald's just the big dog in the neighborhood, then so be it. To me, that's smart. Smart, smart. Anyway, again, December 18th through the 24th, we're going to be doing Hungry and Homeless for the holidays. Please go to the website we've set up, hungryandhomeless.org. Make a small donation. That would be great. Otherwise, come out and visit us there, 255 South Spring Garden Street in Carlisle, December 18th through the 24th. Bring us a can of corn, lima beans, something you've got. A can is great, but we'd prefer a case. And you know, if you're on the better off side, maybe a whole cart full. Because as Elaine says over at Project Share, think of the food bank like any other bank. You're going to make a deposit. At some point, you may need to take something out.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous ray. Democracy is coming to the
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Well, they're stealing down on Wall Street and in Washington.